bored you people. Nothing to see here. Move along. We are having quite a day in Chicago and in the nation. Obviously, we're continuing to watch what's happening on the East Coast with that hurricane that's coming on shore. We're continuing to watch what's happening in politics and in the law. You've got Paul Manafort now pleading guilty to one count of conspiracy and one count of some sort of other violation, fraud.
Bank fraud, I thought. Let me look it up.
It's money. He's got a money count.
The biggest issue is how much is he cooperating with Robert Mueller and the special counsel's office, and what will he say, and what does he know? What does he have to deliver?
Yeah, exactly. What do you know? And how do you know it? And the thing is that defense attorneys, if it ever comes to this, will try to pierce him by saying, well, he was just, you know, the guy was a career criminal. He was just trying to get out of his own way. The president barely knew him. All he was there, they needed a guy who could count to the number that was required for delegates in Cleveland. That's the only reason they had him. He knew how to get delegates.
Yeah.
He's going to tell, the people around him tell, and his history tells a different story than that. And we were there. We covered that story.
We did.
We covered that story all throughout 2016. And when he came on board, it wasn't just about the delegates. It was about finally there's a manager, it's a real guy. This is a guy who had worked for previous presidents. He's the real deal. And we all looked at each other, who the hell is this guy? If he's a real deal, how come we've never heard of him before? All of a sudden, there were all these other things that started popping up, and then we found out he had this Ukrainian business side, and then Kislyak was all of a sudden in Cleveland. Why is the Russian dude in Cleveland? There were a lot of questions that even in that moment, contemporaneously, we had questions about, and now it all starts to fall apart. I told you back in 2016, in the summer of 2016, as I told you last year, as I told you this year, this guy is going to jail.
Well, he's so cozy with the Russian oligarch types that just the whole thing sort of felt as if, what don't we know about him? The president, of course, has pushed back to say, look, this is a guy who has worked with Ronald Reagan, George Bush, Bob Dole. He's been around the presidential, you know, types before and done work for them. It's, you know, the issue now is his, you know, this.
He did not run their campaigns.
No, he did not have that kind of a senior role. No, he didn't. Bob Mueller must think, and we're going to ask Mike Monaco this later, what he must have something in order to strike a plea deal, or how much does he have to offer up? And he's going to be fully cooperating according to this plea agreement with everything. By the way, it's witness tampering, one count of a conspiracy, also admit to everything the government has charged him with, including money laundering, conspiracy to illegal foreign lobbying.
Yes. So there you go. So we'll see what he has. He may not have anything. But he does have one thing. He has his side of the story about that meeting at the Trump Tower because he was in it. And does that corroborate with other people in that meeting?
And what does it do about his chances for a pardon? Because it seemed as if the president was applauding him for not saying anything and holding strong during all of these trials, talking about him as being a good man, and you wonder if he starts cooperating, how that changes those dynamics.
Wrong. Bad guy, liar, bad dude. Well, he's not going to pardon him if he turns on him, right? Because the guy's still looking at time. He was already convicted in another case, right? So this was just getting out of this second case in the District of Columbia that he was facing. So that's really the issue here. And it's kind of smart on the prosecutor's side here, too, not to risk getting not guilty. Because they had one holdout juror in Virginia. Would they get that in? You know, if you don't get convictions, it doesn't help. So, you know, how much are they actually going to push? We don't know. Mike Monaco's going to be here.
Yeah, a lot of questions.
In about 20 minutes to tell us the answers to all those questions. But first, Michael Steele's going to be here to panic with me. Actually, I'm going to panic.
I don't think he's panicking.
He's going to say, it's all going to be okay. And I'm going to tell him it's not okay. Every time you tell me it's okay, it turns out not to be okay. I cannot wait to see The Circus this weekend on Showtime. It returns to Showtime this weekend. Make it an appointment for yourself. Because we talked to Mark McKinnon yesterday, one of the hosts and producers of the show. And we said, well, what's going to be on? He goes, I have no idea. Wait till tomorrow because something else will happen. And it did.
It's true. You know, he said that. He said they hold off until the very last minute for part, you know, editing part of that show because they say that things happen on a Monday. By Sunday, it no longer even appears relevant or top of mind because of the pace of what happens in our government right now. By the way, the president's Twitter feed right now is very much focused on the hurricane, the National Guard.
There you go. Smart. See, now
that's active duty, emergency management systems.
There you go. See, now that someone stole his phone because that doesn't happen like that.
Not a mention of politics or a slapping of anybody.
Who's got my phone? Have you seen my phone? Where's my phone? And meanwhile, John Kelly is in a bathroom tweeting.
It's like hot tomato.
Yeah.
Hot I don't potato. Know. We saw it around here somewhere. Keep looking. But it's all very much focused, which you would hope, you know, at this time like this, that the president is focused on that. And it appears he is.
Okay.
For now.
Melania, where's my phone? Actually, maybe Barron's got it. He's actually doing the right thing. I'm going to go with that. It's like, Dad is really screwing this up. I'm going to help here. First responders, you know, hurricane efforts, that kind of thing. That's a good thing to stay focused on. If you're the president of the United States, that's an appropriate thing.
And then he's telling his mom, don't wear that jacket that says you don't care.
There's new theory on what that means. Every day there's a new theory on what that means. That will be a mystery that dies with all of us. I don't know that we'll ever find out the reason for that. I'm starting to believe that she pulled it out of her closet and didn't realize it was on the back of
really?
Her jacket. All right, let us now check in with Judy. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour? Because here locally, there's a gigantic political story.
Yes, we will be doing that story as well as the Hurricane Florence story. But yes, another well-known name in the mayor's race.
Then there's this. Watch Micah and Joe, Micah Mater, Joe Donlan, weeknights on WGN TV News at 9 o'clock.
That introduction, Michael?
Quite the open.
This is getting better and better. I love it.
There you go. Michael Steele, Man of Steel, the Man of Steel podcast. You can see Michael, of course, on the TV, up and down the TV, looking at, and he constantly has that look of everything's going to be just fine here. He's the guy in every disaster movie who leads people out of the tunnel. The only problem here is, but there's always one guy in the tunnel going, don't follow him! Don't follow him! We're all going to die! And I'm that guy. So that's where we are. We're sort of stuck in the middle here. All right. Let's talk about Paul Manafort here very quickly. Your thoughts on this. There's a lot of people getting on TV right now and saying, nothing to see here. As a matter of fact, Paul Manafort's attorney just stood on the courthouse steps and said, listen, all the stuff he pleaded guilty to had nothing to do with the campaign, nothing to do with Donald Trump. It's all way before all of that, which I think dangles out the notion of, hey, Donald Trump, come here and rescue us. This is your last chance.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's how it looks on the surface in the face of it. But, you know, remember, this is the same team that said that there was no way they were going to capitulate to the special counsel and do a plea, that they were going to stand behind, Donald Trump and not cooperate. Well, they've accepted the plea. They're cooperating. And that would not have been the case if there wasn't anything that Paul Manafort could deliver in the underlying case that Mueller's currently investigating. I mean, this is not a big dot to try to overlook here. I mean, it is right in front of your face what's going on here. He doesn't want to do a second trial because he thought that he wouldn't get convicted in the first. He got convicted on 9 out of 18 counts. And that was, in D.C., and it's going to be a little bit more difficult in Virginia. And so the fact of the matter is they cut the plea to get out from under what was about to come down. He's already facing significant jail time, and that's not going to look favorably on him if he's currently in trial for other charges. As he's going before the judge
and
sentencing.
Judge in Virginia said he was going to await the D.C. trial outcome before sentencing him. So there's a lot of pressure. There's no question about it. But do you think, see, the one thing, the mantra that we keep hearing here is that there's no collusion. There's nothing. If there were, they would have found it by now.
Can we stop that for a second? Just stop it. Let's be clear. This was never about collusion. This was something that was put out into the discussion as a talking point. Mueller wasn't charged to go find collusion. Collusion is not a crime. You don't invoke a special counsel to go look for collusion. It's just there's no criminal statute at the federal level, even the state level, for collusion. What this gets into is corruption. That's always been the case here. How the process was corrupted, how people used their relationships, how they used information, how they used access to corrupt the process. In the course of doing those things, yes, there was collusion. There were phone calls. There were meetings. Oh, in Trump Tower or with his son or whatever. But that's, you have a meeting, that's not criminal.
Right.
Maybe it borderlines conspiracy. That's another underlying potential aspect of this. But, you know, everyone's kind of got hyped up on this collusion thing because Trump kept running around talking about there's no collusion. I agree with you, Trump. There is no collusion because it's not a crime.
Responding to a big narrative that was put out there, though, wasn't it? I mean, he wasn't necessarily the first one to talk about that.
He wasn't the first one to talk about it, and he was responding to it. But I'm just saying this conversation or this part of the conversation got off on the wrong foot legally.
And remember the whole
because.
Yeah, the special counsel's probe is of Russian election meddling as well, and it's possible, isn't it, that Manafort is going to be able to reveal a lot there since he was so close to this Putin ally. I mean, we talk about oligarchs like they're all connected to Putin. Maybe they are. The one he was representing and had a strong business relationship with, definitely, it's documented, was very close with Mr. Putin.
So did Putin try to help? Did they know he tried to help? Did they aid him in helping? Did they do something? Did they has the president been nicer to him or fired these other people with the corrupt intent of repaying the favors that were paid to him by the Russians? And that's it's as simple as that, and as complicated as that all at the same time, because I don't know how you'd ever get that done in court. But
it's only complicated because there are all these ancillary relationships and overlapping relationships and conversations that took place in Russia versus taking place someplace else. That's why it is. But look, this has always been the danger for the president. You have a special prosecutor who's not said one thing. There has not been a leak. There have not been comments. There have not been editorials opining based on sources. No one has a clue what Robert Mueller knows and what shoe Robert Mueller is about to plant somewhere on somebody's backside. Mm-hmm. They don't know. And that is what's made this so difficult for even folks in the media who typically will have a source or two in the Justice Department or some field operation who will say, hey, man, this is what I heard or this is what I'm, you know, what we're looking at. Nothing. Because the only person who knows what Robert Mueller is going to do, and this includes the people who are working with him in the office, is Robert Mueller. And that's why there's been no leaks, because no one knows exactly how he's putting together the pieces. He's got his lawyers out there and his researchers and all these other people who go pull the information, and he's slowly and methodically building the case.
Ooh, do you think that we're going to see anything before the election here?
No.
Okay. So...
No. There's no incentive to do that.
Okay.
There's no incentive to do. I mean, for Mueller, I mean, there's no upside in his doing that.
You were the architect of a red wave in the year 2010 for Republicans when you ran the Republican National Committee. Is there going to be a blue wave this year? As of this writing, I know we talk about this all the time, but now the last couple of weeks, or last week, things feel a little different. Democrats are incredibly optimistic about this. I think they've even wrangled their own party.
They should be. The Republicans effectively handed them. I mean, tell me, my friends, do you hear Republicans out here talking about this great raging economy that we have, the projected 4% annualized growth? Do you hear Republicans out there talking about the benefits that come from having slashed the mandate in Obamacare, even though they didn't pass a repeal and replace? Do you hear Republicans out there talking about the strength of the economy, the personal economies because of the tax cuts that were implemented last year? Do you hear any of that? No.
Well, I hear them. I hear some trying, but the president isn't doing that.
No.
And that's
some
what he
trying,
needs to be doing more of.
Some trying is not the same as a national message that is anchored to what is arguably a good policy, that's been out there on the economy. And so there hasn't been. They've been caught up in the rabbit hole world of Donald Trump and his tweets, having to defend the latest level of whatever coming out of the White House. And so there has been an inability to create that argument. And so now you're sitting there looking at what's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Everybody in the country is going to get a little letter in the mail. And that letter is going to tell you, oh, hello, your healthcare premiums are about to go up 30%, 40%, 20%.
Right.
And so whatever cuts, tax cut benefits you got, wiped out.
Right. And not to mention that, also in a lot of states, you're going to see your tax bill go up, even though you thought it was going to go down. Michael, more on this next week. Thank you very much, my friend. Appreciate it.
All right, guys.
Thanks, Michael.
Steele. Michael Steele is the, hold on, wait for it, Man of Steel!
Yes, he is.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Yes, you are.
You need help. You need help.
Too late for that, my friend.
Thank
all
you.
Right. We got Judy Pilak right, standing later. By with the WGN News, and that comes your way in, too.
That music scared me a little bit.
People's Court.
I know.
And Mike Monaco, you know, he's argued some of his most successful cases in the People's Court. He liked Wapner, though. He was a much better, Judge Judy really scares him, but Wapner.
Because she's always right.
Yeah. Yeah. Not you, Judy. Not you.
I identify with her.
This is our second Michael of the day of four that are going to be on this show today. This is Michael Monaco. He's an attorney at law. And, all right, so we were asking this question of Michael Steele, first Michael, about what this all means with Paul Manafort politically and for the president. And today, and I want to get your thought on this, because you're a criminal defense attorney who has stood on more than one occasion on the courthouse steps and proclaimed after a very bad thing just happened, and you had to spin it in a different direction, how this is good for America, right? So even though it's bad, now your client is doing the right thing here. The lawyer said, hey, listen, this is not about Donald Trump. This is about the remember, he was convicted of things. He's pleaded guilty today to things that had nothing to do with the campaign, nothing to do with the election. There's nothing to see here. We're moving along. And then he wouldn't answer questions about, well, is he cooperating? Does that mean that if it were you doing that, would you be looking for a pardon?
Well, the pardon is always out there, but the funny thing is, he's going to have to cooperate. And if he cooperates, and say for example, Trump does pardon him, and if he lies after that, he'll have to have a second pardon after that. So he has to cooperate as part of this deal. Now, the deal is that he's pled only to two conspiracy counts two, one and two. Now, they include everything, the conspiracy to launder money, tax fraud, failure to file Foreign Bankruptcy Act, failure to apply for the Foreign Agent Registration Act, and lying to the Department of Justice and obstructing justice. So he's pled guilty to everything, but it's only two counts, so they're 2 5-year counts, so he's facing 10 years on this. But he's also going to plead guilty to the other 10 counts from the first indictment in Virginia. So he's got that case out there plus this case, and so he's facing a lot of time. The guidelines on this case are about 20 years, according to this plea agreement.
On the Virginia case?
In both cases.
Oh, so the whole thing wrapped up, the guidelines are 20 years. And he's he's 68 years old, is that right? Something like that?
Yeah.
So that's a long bid. I mean, you got to do 85% in the federal system.
85%, but he's only facing here in this case 10 years, and I don't know how that judge in Virginia is going to treat him. We'll have to see about that. But he's cooperating, and this is a lengthy plea agreement where he agrees to cooperate in almost every sense, testifying for the government and answering all their questions and agreeing to any interviews. And the cooperation terms of this agreement are very, very detailed.
I want to ask you what you think about Rudy Giuliani, what he said today. Obviously speaking in favor of the president, that's his role. He says, quote, "I see no danger to the president in this Manafort plea." He says if Mueller was going to get anything from him, Manafort, they'd have gotten it already. Do you think that's true?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Oh, God. I mean, why not? Why is that not true?
I think he also said none of the persons who pled have said anything against Donald Trump, which, of course, is untrue, too, because Michael Cohen, in his plea agreement, said that Trump is the fellow who told him to commit the act, the illegal act. So here, of course, we know that Cohen was at the meeting in June of 2016 with the president's son and son-in-law.
Manafort was.
That's right. Manafort was. So we know that, at least. So they're going to have a lot of questions to answer.
Right. How did that meeting take place? What was actually said in that meeting? And remember, we have...
Did you know about it ahead of time?
Right. And did the president know? Did you tell the president about it? Did he know about it?
Yeah, of course he did.
Right. Well, these are the questions that are going to be answered that have not been out there. And then that jams up Donald Trump Jr., who has already testified about
that he didn't tell his father, and that the meeting was about adoption.
Right. So The question is, I mean, someone goes to jail out of that meeting. We already know Manafort's going to jail, but does he then jam up Donald Trump Jr., and is that the pressure point on the president? I mean, ultimately, and I asked this of Michael Steele, but, you know, ultimately the president and, the people speaking for him, like Rudy Giuliani, are saying, and a lot of his supporters, you know, believe this because they're saying it, which is that there's no collusion here. There's nothing to see here. If they have it, they would have done it by now. This is all, they just can't find anything. So they're looking to make something up here. Your thought on that as a criminal defense attorney?
Well, that's absolutely untrue. I mean, we know that they met with the Russians. They know it. They met with the Russians with the intention of the Russians helping the campaign.
But what if they didn't? Okay, and we're gonna have to explain that to people who don't believe it anyway. But that's true because that email that came out that shows that Donald Trump Jr. was like, yeah, great, let's meet with them. They got stuff on Hillary. Great, I love it. But maybe we'll use it.
Right.
He wanted to call the timing of it. Maybe we'll use it later after the conventions. It'll be better then. Good.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. What if they never did anything about it? You know, the intent to do it.
But they did have a meeting, and they had a meeting with the intention of breaking the law.
Is that a crime?
Yes, of course it's a crime.
To have
like
oh my God, I had no idea.
You have a meeting
where you discuss breaking
exactly.
a crime, but then you don't break the crime. Is that
assuming they didn't get anything dirt? Assuming you're suggesting that they didn't ever got any dirt on Hillary. Now we know that the Russians for a long time were hacking the Democrats during the election, and we know that Trump was promoting that.
There was that. Yeah, that happened.
Yeah.
Hey, Russia. Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
There was that moment, and then the Russians did actually then release the emails exactly at the moment that Donald Trump was in the middle of grab her by the pee. Right. So there was that. So within hours of that, they changed the story. Now that could have Michael.
Yes.
That could have been a coincidence.
Not a coincidence.
Or Michael.
Trump really have no belief in coincidences.
Or that could have been something that they just did without the Trump campaign telling them to do it, because I'm gonna guess that there isn't any way to prove that the Trump campaign told them to do that.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not so sure about that. We'll see with Cohen, because Mick Cohen is now cooperating too. The Vanity Fair today says Cohen's already met with the prosecution and is cooperating.
Okay.
Now, Ms. Manafort's got to turn over his real estate as part of this, including his Trump Tower, $3.6 million unit, and a brownstone somewhere. Why is that as part of this?
Because it's money laundering and tax fraud. And so
Ill-gotten gains.
He has to turn all that in. And
you like how I just threw that out there like I knew it?
How'd you just know that? I mean, how does this guy know it? Is it from being in the waiting room outside Mike Monaco's office?
Just listening
to people?
That's exactly what it is.
Is that your education?
Yeah. No.
Sometimes it sounds like you went to law school, Rob.
Yeah. No, you know what I do? I have dinner with Mike all the time.
Yeah.
And exactly. And sometimes we sit with his clients, and then we learn things. We learn words like this is unindicted co-conspirator number one, unindicted co-conspirator number two.
Right, like, one, two, and three.
He's doing a dime. We learned that one
literally
on the show.
That was true.
We actually we once had a dinner with a guy who when we sat down at the table, the guy goes, I want you to meet unindicted co-conspirator number one, unindicted co-conspirator number two.
Yeah, that was funny.
And he wasn't kidding.
That was very funny.
He was kidding.
He was joking.
Of course he was.
Everyone's kind of an unindicted co-conspirator until you're indicted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right. That'll be in my book.
So this is a very hot day. Today is a very hot day. The government is now hot on the heels of the president in this investigation with all of Manafort's cooperation, and we know that Cohen is cooperating. So it's been a bad day for the president.
Let me put this in terms that we can all understand and agree on. I take you back now to Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid.
Oh,
they're running away from LaForge or whatever the guy's name is, the sheriff, right? The guy, the bounty guy is coming after them. And they finally outrun them. They jump onto one horse and they go up the mountain, the side of the mountain, and they get up to the side of the mountain. They're looking back down and they see the two guys. They see some of the people go after the one horse and other people go after the other horse. And then they realize that they're all coming back and they're coming right back at them. And they're like, who are these guys? Right? And they, so it really became, it's going to be a moment where it's going to be Donald Sr. and Donald Jr. having to jump off a rock into the water, and one of them can't swim, and it's gonna be it's gonna be a weird moment because Melania's like, go ahead, jump and take a big boy with you. I'm taking other boy to Slovenia, right?
It did surprise me that Donald Jr. said last week, or was it this week, that he has no fear of jail.
Well, that's he's never gonna say he's got a fear of jail because that would with his father.
Why bring it up.
I think it was brought
up.
They asked him the question, I think.
They asked him the question.
He was just quoted as
And he's not going to say, I'm afraid of jail. You know what his dumb father's going to do then?
But what, let me just explain something to me as defense.
Really, really fast.
Quickly.
Really fast. 10 seconds.
Why does Manafort take this when all along he's been heralded as being brave and not going to bend to Mueller?
Okay.
Yeah, he did not see a jury come back with the guilty verdict at that point. Now that he knows juries will convict him, despite whatever the president says against the case, the juries will convict him. Especially juries in Washington, D.C. will convict him.
There's a good answer right there. Michael, thank you very much. Appreciate
it. Thanks, Mike.
My pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. We've got Violetta is going to join us in the traffic. But first, Judy, what's up at the top of the hour?
A big smelly fire burning on Chicago's south side.
Traffic's being brought to you by the Illinois Department of Transportation. Bill Kahn Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN.
Yes.
Tom Skilling joins us right now, Permasil Basement Systems, bringing you Tom's appearance.
What a beautiful day, too. Happy Friday, guys.
Thank you so much, Tom. It is a beautiful day, beautiful weekend.
You almost feel guilty here because of everything going on the East Coast.
It's all related. Did you notice how warm it's gone? We've actually had some low 90s at some of our weather book stations out west of here. So what's happening is as Florence comes inland, the venting of the air and the sinking air is actually picking up. So it builds a big dome of compressed warm air over us that sits in place. And so we have some beautiful weather, even as things have deteriorated out east. You know, it's amazing. The number of people are saying, boy, they dodged a bullet. It was only a Cat 1 when it came ashore. And they have not dodged a bullet.
No,
that's a disaster.
Still very much going on. And this is a water storm.
It is.
It's not so much of a wind storm, although there's been plenty of wind damage.
Yes.
The real story here is the amount of water and the flooding that's going on. You're seeing pictures now of these rescues that are attempting to be made.
Oh, yeah.
And there's people always think about the drama. You know, especially those of us who are here and not in the middle of this, you know, you watch the spinning thing going, but people who live in this world get that this is the spinning and the wind and all that, that's short-lived, and often as they approach, especially this far north this time of year, you're probably, you know, category one is, you know, that's that would be a very big storm for them under any circumstances.
Yeah. And, look at the winds it produced. It has produced a larger storm surge than any hurricane. And this is an area that's had 30 hurricanes go ashore since 1851. And yet, even with that hurricane experience, they've not had a storm surge like the one that's coming with this on parts of the coastline, 6 to 10 feet. And the rains are only beginning. I mean, this
That's
is
the
gonna...
thing is, it seems as if they're you're certainly not out of the woods. You're watching people shoot video who chose to stay as the water is rising within their homes to the point where they've evacuated to their own attics.
You know, I remember we had some folks come in from a TV station out in the Virgin Islands who had gone through Hurricane Hugo. And they were, I said, what was that like? And they said, you know, we were all excited. We had a hurricane party planned and everything else. And they said about 3 hours into listening to that roaring wind outside and that, you know, you start realizing this is not a fun event. And then when the house starts coming apart. Now, that was a windstorm. But, you know, look at Houston last year.
Mm.
It wasn't the wind that made the story there. It was the rain, which I think should open a line of discussion here that we're not appropriately indicating the strength of these storms and their damaging capability with the Saffir-Simpson Index, which is the Cat 1, Cat 2,
which
Cat
is looking at wind speeds, not looking at rain totals.
It's a single parameter.
Because you do see that when they interview people. Well, it's just a Cat 2. I'm going to stay put.
Yeah.
What?
And it shows a total misunderstanding of A, the index, and B, what it the shortcomings of it. This storm was huge by hurricane standards. And so in terms
in terms of width, right?
That's right. Aerial coverage.
Diameter of storm. Yeah.
Exactly, Ro. Okay. And you know what's interesting about this is if you calculated total energy, this storm was more powerful than you know, a Cat 3 storm that would have been smaller going into the area in terms of total energy production. And that's what translates to the waves, the rain, and the storm surge. And, you know, we were talking about it yesterday. Only 8% of the people who die in hurricanes, Atlantic hurricanes, die because of winds. 76% of the people who perish do so in the floods and the storm surge. So the wind is a minor factor in terms of death. There are some horrible deaths that occur because of wind, people hit by projectiles and so forth. But the actual numbers of people who perish in these storms because of wind is actually quite small.
Right.
Mm-hmm. It's a storm surge. You saw with Hurricane Harvey, the flooding, it was the monstrosity of the size of that storm, too, and the flooding that persisted as it just sort of stalled over the Houston area. And in that case, you saw areas that had not flooded in years, decades, not in floodplains, not in flood zones, nothing, had experienced substantial flooding. And I wonder here if you're going to see the same thing.
I strongly suspect that's true. The only saving grace in this case is you don't have a population center as heavily and densely populated as Houston. But tell that to the people who live there and have to put up with it. You know, that may be an academic point to them.
Right.
Who have to live through real life, and real life includes being on your roof hoping to get rescued because the water's risen.
Mm-hmm. And this is a community, a series of communities on the Carolina border there, the north-south border, that take a lot of tourism from this area, from the Midwest.
Sure.
There are people who own homes there. It's one of those places that you can go to, you know, through November, essentially, you know, to go to, you know, do outdoorsy kind of stuff because the weather's very nice. Golf, especially. It's a gigantic golf community. I think there's 80 golf courses in the Myrtle Beach area.
Beautiful area.
It's very, very, very special. And there's great, you know, Myrtle Beach is another one of those places where people go to conventions and there's, you know, guys' trips.
Yes.
There's a strip club every 15 seconds in Myrtle Beach. But the roofs are half off there. Do you see what I just did there?
I do.
Did you see what I did?
Nicely done.
Thank you very much.
Excellent.
Anyway, the point is that this is a place that people go, and this is going to be closed down. They're trying to put a real brave face on it, like, by Sunday we'll be fine.
No, they won't.
No, they're not going to be. They're going to take some time here to get the water down and out. And then when the water comes back out, it does damage because it takes things with it as it recedes. And so you have to worry about that. Now, the question that we have for you, Tom Skilling,
yes,
is what's behind it?
Well, not a lot right now. There are a couple of systems down there. By the way, you know, here's an interesting stat. Comes out of Phil Klosbeck, who's a hurricane researcher in Colorado at Colorado State. He pointed out that this is the second most named storms we've had in any September 1 through 13 period, behind only 1964. We've had so many storms pop. I don't see anything that's...
Isn't there one that was sort of tending south and they thought it was...
Yeah, Isaac. And that was being watched. But, you know, at least at this point, Ro, it doesn't look like that's a major threat. It's kind of fallen apart as it's come westward.
That's very
good
news.
Oh. It is.
Yes, it is.
The only thing you worry about is that Caribbean is like a... nitroglycerin for
superheater.
A jet fuel for hurricanes, because the water is so warm and so deep warm that you know that's a perfect place for these storms to form. This typhoon that's going into the northern Philippines right now, a super typhoon, the heat content of the water there looks very much like what we have in the Caribbean. But the one thing is, we've got an El Nino developing, and that puts stronger upper-level winds over it. And the fact that the winds in Florence haven't been any stronger than they've been was the result of some shear up around 200, 250 millibars. That's up around 39,000 feet. And there was the winds were just strong enough up there to create vertical wind shear. And that limited the wind field, but not the moisture field with this system. So that's
some good news. But again,
yeah,
that's not the big story, because a lot of the Atlantic coast is prepared for heavy winds. I mean, the construction, once you get north of, basically almost all the way up to and through Washington, D.C., if you're living on the coast, those people have, especially these buildings have been built. You get down, like from Jacksonville down south, all those buildings have, 200 mile an hour windows
right.
in them and stuff like
windows,
that. And then shadow, they've got the things that come down, the big, the big shutters.
Yes.
And so they're, that's code in Florida. And then, Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, those buildings are able to withstand a big windstorm. It's the water that nobody can handle.
And you know what, Ro? There may be another shoe to drop on this storm, and it was pointed out by a storm surge expert in South Carolina. The winds have been blowing offshore because of the way the circulation goes around a hurricane there. They're going onshore in North Carolina, piling up the water, but as this anomalous southwestward drift of the storm takes place, the winds that have been blowing offshore in northern South Carolina along the coast will start blowing onshore. And what happens is this dome of water that is held at bay by the offshore, in other words, the westerly winds that are blowing away from the coast and blowing the water there, it may suddenly, as the winds turn easterly, come washing back on with sudden fury. Mm-hmm. And so folks who may have presumed up till now, because they haven't seen storm surge in South Carolina, might find the water comes up suddenly, even faster than it did, say, in North Carolina, as this storm continues southward, even in its weakening phase. So that's something to watch in addition to the flooding rain. So this story is far from over, and it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out.
As you point out, the thing that people need to remember from this, when people go, oh, it was not such a bad deal, it's gigantic. The field of the the space that this thing is taking up and the damage it's doing is geographically a large swath of area.
The total energy being produced by this storm far exceeds what you would normally associate with a Category 1 storm. And that's just because of that breadth of the storm that you mentioned.
Well, I really hope that that this other stuff that's out there, because aren't there behind Isaac, aren't there two more named storms?
There are a series of systems out there. I'll be honest with you. I've been so busy with this that I haven't paid attention to them. Isaac is just a tropical storm, 40 mile per hour winds. Joyce and Helene are a mess. They're all sheared apart. Okay. There's a little wave going toward Texas, but nothing there that looks imminently horrible.
Okay.
Now, that doesn't mean something can't develop. We're near the height of hurricane season now, and you can still get
Oh, you get to November.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, remember Superstorm Sandy?
Oh, yeah.
People always say, well, it's a superstorm. They don't get what it actually was.
Oh, that storm was amazing. That combined a winter snowstorm with a tropical storm. That And the whole thing was like 1,500 miles across, and it was the fetch of easterly winds that went into the East Coast.
Right.
That was a real rarity. That was like the perfect storm in that sense.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Like that movie, The Perfect Storm, and that kind of a system. And so,
yes.
You know, you can get that stuff all the way into November. As a matter of fact, I remember one of the worst ones that went through South Florida was end of October, beginning of November.
Oh, yeah.
And so you got to be very, just keep our eyes on this.
Well, there's another case. Do you know Sandy was a Cat 1 hurricane when
right.
it went ashore? Now, there's a great example.
Mm-hmm.
Cat 1 hurricane went ashore, and that was Superstorm Sandy. What made it so awful was its size, and it combined a non-tropical with a tropical storm. And so there's a perfect example of how the Saffir-Simpson categorization doesn't completely describe what's occurring. And there were billions of dollars worth of damage.
We're going to call it the skilling.
Yeah, you know what? I'd like we need to. We have to have a new monitor to warn people. Isn't this what you're suggesting, Tom?
Yeah.
I mean, are people considering this?
The research community has been talking about this for some time. We use an energy calculation known as ACE, which is accumulated energy, tropical energy. And there's another one, this index, called IKE. And it would involve, educating people to use that. And that's not an easy thing to do.
Here we're going to call it the Skilling Con, because we're talking about it on this show. So
you're going to throw your name in there, Ralph?
I'm going to throw my name in.
You're going to piggyback on that one?
I don't know anything that's going on here. I am going to throw myself into the Skilling Con.
Absolutely.
Why is it the con?
Well, because
why con? Why do you deserve to be part of it?
I just think that, you know, Ted Fujita, God bless him.
He did a lot, though.
He's, you know, we talk about him a lot.
Yeah.
We talk about the Saffir-Simpson. We don't even know. It's Jimmy Saffir and O.J. Simpson. I don't know.
Joanne Simpson, and they were very well-known hurricane researchers. That index was developed in 1971. And see, with our understanding of tropical cyclones was not as complete as it is today in those days.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the best we could do. You didn't have modeling in those days that does what it does today. We didn't have. We were only starting to get full satellite reconnaissance of the
Some of the stuff just showed up, and people were like, wait, what is that?
Yeah.
Right, without knowing anything about it. And just imagine. All right. Tom, another beautiful weekend here in Chicago. That's the important thing. And Monday night for the Bears game?
Looks good. Beautiful.
Great.
Unseasonably warm. It'll be humid. More like baseball than football weather, but who cares, you know?
No, I'm all for it.
That's right.
Woohoo!
Nice.
Thank you, Tom.
You bet, guys.
Thanks,
have a great weekend.
Thank you, you too.
You bet.
All right, Tom Skilling, let's now check in with Judy. What's coming up at the bottom of the hour?
It's now a tropical storm, but Florence still packing a punch.
Rocon Show. Yeah, it's Anna DeVlantis.
Yes, it is.
720 WGN. We're getting ready for the weekend land coming up here after 5 o'clock. I think I stole that from another radio station, but you know what I mean.
That's okay. We got you.
All right.
Got the Carnival Wagon coming up, too.
Yeah. Serenello's. That's my spot in Wheeling.
Serenello's. How about that?
They do a nice meatball. Very great Italian spot up in Wheeling. They do a nice
I can't wait.
Real nice.
Real nice food, huh?
Very good.
Real nice over there.
Little Italian spot over there in Wheeling.
Are they on their way over here? Because it's like a lot of traffic.
Hopefully the meatballs
and we're
are
hungry.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, we'll get here.
Yep. And they're going to be here. And then we got listen to this. We got the boy Illinois is going to be joining us.
Mm-hmm. Rising star.
Huge rising star. They say that he is the next Chance and or Vic Mensa.
Mm-hmm.
Quite honestly, I think he's going to leapfrog Vic Mensa and become the next big star out of Chicago.
Wouldn't that be cool?
He is going to be here. This is going to be joining after 5:30. We are going to be on the stream performing all of this for you. We're doing it top 5 at 5. And then at 5:30, we've got the Carnival Wagon rolling.
With the fourth Michael to appear on the show today.
Yes.
And Michael Bonner.
We've got the, and then we got the boy Illinois. We got Richard Roper telling us about the Emmys and all that. So if you'd like to join us, you know how to do it. It's very simple. You download the app on your phone, and you listen to the WGN app. You can do it that way. You can tell your smart speaker or your phone or whatever it is that you scream at and ask it to do something for you to listen to WGN Radio on TuneIn. right? Or if you're near a desktop or a laptop, just go to our website, WGNradio.com, and you can just find it right there. It's very simple.
Very simple to do.
And the stream is so much fun.
It is fun because
things get a little crazy on the stream.
Fewer interruptions on the stream, and the language changes slightly.
Yes.
And the
inhibition. I mean, people just...
Uncensored.
It does become uncensored.
Imagine where that candle talk would have gone if it was on the stream.
Oh, gosh.
It flies...
I did not know a candle was code for anything. Lighting a candle.
It's not code.
Well, now we've learned. There's a lot. It's very loaded with a lot of...
meaning.
Careful now. We're not on the stream.
Yeah. Well, once we're not on the radio, we'll be able to explain all of these things. It's very interesting.
I didn't know it was code now. This is breaking.
It's code. Mm-hmm.
We'll wait for
everybody knows what that means.
All right. No, they don't. And that's unfortunately the case. But we will have all that coming your way at 5:30. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a ton of fun. All right. Now, Mike Flannery is joining us because by way of telephonic device, he's a very busy man. There's breaking news here. All right. Can I just tell you something here, Flans? I don't know if I even mentioned this, but... you know, Mike Flannery is responsible for why I got sexually assaulted by a dog last week.
I think we owe Mike Flannery an apology to issue to his dog for the way we spoke of your dog on this show, Mike. We're sorry.
Well, actually, Mason has asked me to find out your ring size.
I would think he'd know it by now, but anyway. All right. Because I was at Mike's house on Saturday night. We had a little bit of and he's a beautiful, gigantic dog, but the dog took a liking to me, and I believe I'm now with child. All right, let's talk about there's Mason driving the car right there. He's so big. Let me ask you a question about Bill Daley. I was on the phone with a bunch of local politicians today, you know, talking about other things, and we do our research, you know, everybody's calling everybody on a Friday. Hey, what do you hear? What's going on? And so I had one guy I was talking to who was like, it's Bill Daley. What do you think about this Bill Daley? And I said, I don't think Bill Daley's getting in this race. I really don't. It's, you know, there's just too much. It's like, it's a bit of a clown car now, and I don't know if he wants a piece of it. And then I get off the phone with the guy, and then literally as I'm hanging up the phone, I get a push notification, Bill Daley entering the race on Monday. And I'm like, oh, I'm such an idiot. How did I not see this coming? Why is Bill Daley getting into this race?
Well, it's a good question. He's age 70. He appears to be in good health. You know, been in politics his whole life. I'm sure he's dreamed of, you know, he's the youngest of the seven kids. How come those other guys got to go into it and I haven't? But, you know, he's also very wealthy. He, you know, has worked for J.P. Morgan Chase. He's at Argentier Capital now. He could write some big checks and self-fund the exploratory part of this. You know, he's also had head fakes in the past. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
We've had him say he's going to run for governor, and, you know, he's done that several times. So
this seems different, though. Let me stop you on that, because that's like the exploratory part. Well, I'm just kind of thinking about it. There's such a short window on this now in terms of getting this done, you got to get the petitions out. There's a lot of legal mechanism. People who are making a decision have to make a decision within the week. This is either you jump in or you don't. And if he jumps in for a week.
He says he's going to jump in on Monday. You know, they need 12,500 signatures.
Which means you need 25,000.
He says staying in, and that he's not forming an exploratory committee. He is announcing a run for mayor.
Right. So I'll believe it when he's on the ballot. Let's see that. But nonetheless,
look,
he's got a big name. He's got maybe one of the biggest in town, but it's going to be a crowded field. There are other people who hope to occupy that same niche. One of them is Gary Chico, and actually I have him on my show tonight at 10 o'clock. And Chico was Richard M. Daley's. You know, he had every big job there was under Richard M. Daley. He was the chief of staff. He was the president of the school board. He was the president of the park district board. You know, and he's in that same sort of friendly to the business community niche that Bill Daley, you know, hopes to run as part of his coalition. You know, so hey, could he? You know, may he run? Absolutely. But let's see.
He's very. You know what? This is Mike Flannery being cagey.
He is. I think Gary Chico's running.
I'm going to pull you out of this for a second. Now, Gary Chico who's not exactly a household name, right? Cops and firefighters aren't going to be sitting around going, "Hey, this is Gary Chico, look at that boy about that." I mean, this is not, he's not a guy. He is a business guy. He's very wealthy, very smart, very, very, you know, dedicated to the city. I've always appreciated him for that. But the reality is that he doesn't carry a daily name in this race changes the dynamic. It's almost like an incumbent, you know, it's incumbent light. To have him in. Now, carries a name for good and for bad, right?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, exactly. That's the thing I want to ask you about, exactly, Mike. Right. It seems like this is a time when, like, legacy, longtime politicians have fallen out of favor somewhat. I mean, you saw that in the presidential race a bit with even the Clinton name and certainly with Jeb Bush, and people are thinking these are times of change. Maybe we need new answers, new solutions. And maybe, right. And he also does carry the baggage, doesn't he? Does he not? Of his any decision his brother made, won't he be asked about that?
That's absolutely the case. Now he can say, "Hey, I'm not my brother. You know, go talk to him. Talk to the people that worked in his administration." But I don't know how that may or may not work as well for him as it did for Jeb Bush. You know, which wasn't too well. And listen, we probably got 20 names, 25 names being thrown around. I think in the end, we may get 6, 7, 8 candidates who actually follow through and conduct full campaigns. So to some degree, I say let's wait. But, you know, the names, you know, you've got this draft Chuy Garcia campaign that was launched by Congressman Gutierrez the other day. Now, Susana Mendoza's people are launching a draft Susana Mendoza campaign. Preckwinkle, you know,
I got the answer for this already. Let me just, Mike, you need me to explain this to you? You know, I can go on that Flannery fired up thing too and explain this stuff to you. This is all going to come down to Mike Madigan. Mike Madigan is going to be the final determinant in some ways of splitting the decision between Susana Mendoza, who I think is, you know, she's interested in it. There's no question about it. You can sort of see her. She's from Central Casting for a Chicago mayor. But I don't, I think that Madigan, both Madigan and Chuy Garcia, by way of Luis Gutierrez, are all tied in to Madigan. Madigan's going to support one of these, not both of these candidacies, for either Chuy or for Susana Mendoza, and I think it's going to end up being Chuy, because Chuy can run for Congress, he wins, he's unopposed, and then he can run for mayor and then decide what he wants to do from there.
I mean, and if Chuy gets in, Bernie Sanders is going to come in for him, and he'll be all
God's
in.
Sake.
Bernie
oh,
may
God.
Be running 2020. I mean, he's already talking about that again.
And I'll tell you what, if Chuy gets in with the Sanders support, that'll be enough to certainly get into a runoff, because that's ultimately the way this goes. The rules have changed, as you guys know, since 1983 when Harold Washington won. You know, he got about 35% in the Democratic primary, and that was, you know, that was effectively the election. But it is, it's not going to work that way now. And so there's going to be, you know, who were the two in the runoff, right?
Right.
I think if Chuy gets in, he's won.
Do you think there'll be some political consolidation here, though? To Rose's point, you're going to have the Madigan candidate. Maybe you'll have a Daley candidate, a Rahm Emanuel-backed candidate. When this all shakes out,
I think Rahm Emanuel's candidate no longer counts. I think whoever it's going to be will not count, because if the Daleys get in, it changes it, and I think it's going to be Chuy and Daley, Daley and Chuy, and that's where it's going to be at the runoff, because they're both going to get just enough. And then the question is, does a guy like a Gary McCarthy jump in with a Daley and stay out of the thing? I mean, that's going to be kind of an interesting thing. And you know, Willie Wilson, he's going to stay in it to the end because he's having fun.
Oh, yeah.
But then, is there going to be an African-American candidate? Now, you were just mentioning Toni Preckwinkle. Do you think she's going to run? I know you're the reporter.
I think that she wanted to do, she wanted to preempt the field for and be the progressive candidate. I think she doesn't have the ability to do that. That's one thing we've seen, is that she doesn't necessarily preempt the field. Luis Gutierrez has weighed in and said, nope, that's not who I want. I want Chuy. I think there will be, remember, somebody getting 22, 23% of the vote, that could be enough to get into the runoff row.
Yeah, that's true. That's because
with this many people,
right? Because somebody could have 40 something, and then the next, you know, the next tallest, you know, could be much shorter, right? And but that's all you need as long as somebody doesn't get. No one's getting 50% and winning this thing outright in February. That's how it works, by the way. For people who are confused, we're now in the runoff system. So if the initial run is in February, if somebody gets 50% plus one vote, then they become mayor. But then the top two finishers under that would be the ones who would run in April if it gets to that. So, did I explain that right?
I don't go as far as you in saying that Rahm is irrelevant. He can still do a lot of things behind the scenes. He can be the entree to money and manpower and campaign resources.
I'm going to tell you something. The minute Rahm was no longer mayor, you're going to see this with Trump too. People feared Rahm. They didn't really love Rahm as mayor. And I mean, in terms of the people who are around him, certainly the city workers and the other, you know, the aldermen, and you also have the aldermen to deal with here too. Right. There's a whole other play here. I just think that people are, if Rahm is no longer going to be in this business there, and he doesn't appear to be running for anything else, I think people are going to be pairing off of that. And all of a sudden, if Daley is back, everybody's going to be, you know, looking for a contract. That is the answer to this question. Right. Thank you, Mike Flannery. Flannery Fired Up starts at what time tonight on Fox 32?
10 p.m.
10 p.m.?
10 p.m. We got Chico, and we're going to be talking about that state police crime lab where Chicago detectives have to wait 1 year for a DNA test to come back.
Gee,
wow,
it's worse than I thought. That's crazy.
That's absurd. So there's two state lawmakers who want to change that. They've got a proposal in the hopper in Springfield, attracting a bunch of co-sponsors. We're going to change that.
I just want to tell you that I have your dog's DNA all over me, and I've had it for days.
We're sorry to your dog. I'm sure your dog's very sweet, but we painted a pretty ugly picture on the air the other day.
Yeah, well, not ugly. Well, I mean, he's an affectionate animal.
Kind of
amorous.
Gross.
He's an amorous fellow.
Amorous fellow, and he's about 180 pounds. So it's really sort of a titanic battle was going on there. All right,
you've always had that animal magnetism.
Of course, yes, I've got a pheromonic thing going on. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Michael. All right, Mike Flannery. See him tonight at 10 o'clock on Flannery Fired Up on Fox 32. Right now, let's check in with Judy. What's coming up at the top of the hour in the WGN newsroom?
There won't be a Pritzker running for mayor, but there will be a Daley.
Thank you, Judy.
You're welcome. Duh. Oh,
that was a little frosty.
Join us. It's always frosty.
Was it? Because I was actually being nice.
I know. Oh, I can tell when
she's
frosty.
That was nice,
frosty.
Judy. You meant Roe. Ro was frosty.
Yeah.
Because look at how you said thank
it's
you.
Just how we go. Join us on the stream after 5:30 for the Canarble Wagon, brought to you by It's Just Lunch. There's White Sox Baseball coming to you on 720 WGN. And then on WGN everywhere on the stream, you can continue on with the party that continues here. It's going to be something. It's going to be something.
It really is always something when we're on the stream. It's a slightly different show, I think we've all noticed.
Will there be dancing again today?
It's going to be something. And some of the stuff that we've done is inappropriate. That's true.
Some.
People.
It's the top five on the Rokan Show.
Five.
Let's go.
Four, three, two, one.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
Checking in at
number five.
See this crazy story in Dallas where this police officer returning from work goes home. Enters into an apartment after a long day, they say, and she ends up entering the wrong apartment, sees a large black man in the apartment with the lights off. She tells him to stop. He goes, I don't know, what do you mean stop? And she opens up fire, kills him. And then the lights go on. And it turns out it's not her apartment. She went into the wrong apartment. Well, now the attorney for the family of Butham John, who is the deceased in this case, is saying that the Dallas Police Department obtained a search warrant the day that Jean was shot. And this is trying to create an incrimination circumstance surrounding this guy in his own apartment.
Right.
They asked for permission to find evidence of drug paraphernalia. That's specifically what they asked for. And so this was the plan from the Dallas PD investigators from the beginning, is to look for ways to incriminate the person they just killed. This is the normal playbook from American policing. When they're accused of criminal behavior themselves, the first step is just to criminalize the victim.
Well, I don't know that's a playbook for that, but this certainly is not helping this case, because...
No.
She's changing her story. She initially said that she went in because she was in the wrong apartment. She realized she was in the wrong apartment and made a mistake. And now they're saying, well, maybe were they actually looking for drug paraphernalia? And
she said she found the door ajar, but they're fire doors that are extremely heavy that slam shut.
It's like when you leave a lot of hotel rooms.
Right.
And there's videos of other residents in the apartment building just showing, hey, listen, here's what happens when you leave the door ajar. It closes.
And she said he ignored her verbal commands. If you're in your own apartment sitting down, don't you, how do you react to that?
Yeah. Yes.
It does feel as if the police releasing the fact that they found a small amount of marijuana in his house to be.
Have nothing to do with anything.
A character assassination attempt. Yes.
Huge backlash against it anyway.
Absolutely.
So.
It's a mistake. It's a tragic, awful mistake.
Mm.
But it is. You know, don't complicate it by trying to make it worse.
Number four.
Showtime's The Circus returning on Sunday.
Yay.
And they have a Steve Bannon interview, which Mark McKinnon told us about yesterday.
he
and he's
did.
Like, wait till you see what he said. Wait till you see what this is all about.
He's always good for something.
John Heilman interviewed Bannon, confronted the former White House chief strategist. On the anonymous New York Times op-ed piece, and Bannon said, well, the whole thing's a coup.
The op-ed represents a concern about the president's fitness for office, a decision not to try to remove him, but instead to try to stay in office with him and keep him from doing some of the things they fear he would do in his worst moments.
How is that a coup?
What they have said is that they're not going to implement the plans of the president of the United States. It's exactly like McClellan. Lincoln wanted to go to a hard war, and they didn't want to do it. They didn't think he was fit to do that, and they had this thing of what they were going to not follow their orders. Okay?
You're really comparing Trump to Lincoln now?
Absolutely.
Oh, dear.
And
God.
He ought to do, by the way, he ought to do the exact thing Lincoln did, fire McClellan.
Oh, my gosh. There's a lot going on.
Lincoln fired McClellan. He said he should do the exact thing Lincoln did. And by the way, coup's really more like the last episode we saw of Game of Thrones 9 years ago when we last saw the episode when like Cersei Lannister engineered a coup.
Yeah.
You know, people
died. Boy, did she.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, spoiler alert for those of you still binging and not there yet.
I mean, I am certainly no fan of the president, but I don't really like the idea that this was an anonymous op-ed. I'd like to know who the hell did it, and not so that there could be retribution, but so to put some meat on that bone, so we do get a sense of what's really going on here. And I also happen to think that, you know, this whole idea, well, we're going to impeach him, unless there's an impeachable offense, until that's been articulated, elections have consequences for good and for bad. And maybe this is a lesson the United States needs to learn, because we have hired a guy. We voted for a guy. We elected a guy who seems to do this in a way that makes a lot of two-thirds of America pretty uncomfortable. So maybe the two-thirds of America should have gotten off its ass when it had a chance.
Right. And now we'll be fine, because in 2020, Bernie Sanders will run again and Michael Bloomberg will run. So we'll have another New York billionaire to pick from.
Oh, my God.
We're all set.
And when is Bernie Sanders going to learn? We're not interested. Leon Trotsky died years ago. Axe to the head in Mexico. We don't need an actual communist to be president of the United States.
He might say, if you didn't do that funky business with the superdelegates, that it might have been him instead of Hillary. That's what his team says.
And he would have lost like 49 states.
Well, yeah, please. I don't think Democrats are going to make this mistake. Democrats are going to do. I'm really more interested in what the Republican Party is going to do here. Because the Republican Party, are they going to run somebody against Trump? And is that person going to get any kind of traction? Is Trump just going to mow over them by being the mean guy? Is that what's going to happen? We'll find out.
Yes, we will.
Stay tuned on the next episode of America.
Oh, gosh.
I'm just, what year is this? We're going to start seeing daily for mayor signs on lawns. And
I know.
Year three, year two, and year one coming your way. But first, Violetta, what do you got? Top 5-5 continues right here on 720 WGN. We're up to
number three.
Julie Chen showed up on TV last night. You know, she's the wife of Les Moonves, who got fired by CBS for being creepy. Well, she's also the host of Big Brother and, of course, The Chew or The View or the whatever the thing is called. What is it called?
The Chew.
No, the talk.
The talk.
Thank you. Right. She got every job at CBS because her husband was the boss, which kind of plays into this whole thing. She did not address specifically the allegations, but said,
"For now, let's eavesdrop on the house guest. From outside the Big Brother house with Brent, I'm Julie Chen Moonves. Good night."
Drops a third name.
Never did that before.
Well, that's because Les is like, "Hey, you wouldn't have this job if it weren't for me. You're now Julie Chen Moonves."
Thanks.
Wow, interesting. Very interesting.
Very.
Yeah. Well, he's no longer there, so she can do it like, hey, he's not the boss anymore. I still have this job legitimately, like we think that's the case.
Number two.
Smashing Pumpkins have a new album coming out.
Nice.
And here we...
That's the best part of it right there. 2 seconds.
Now, Jimmy Chamberlain is back with James Iha and Billy Corgan, and they've got nearly two decades. It's been since her last album. This is going to be called Shiny and Oh So Bright, Volume 1. And then No Past, No Future, No Sun. How about that? I don't know. I'm confused by the whole thing. Mm-hmm. But here they are making the announcement. And here is Silvery Sometimes Ghosts. Like a rocket, sparks like a dying sun. Snap like a dragon. Sounds very much like the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah.
It's a little stripped down.
Yeah,
but,
exactly.
That's what it is. All right.
Cool.
And finally,
number one.
Michael Avenatti is a household name, but should he? His first interview with Tucker Carlson was perhaps the biggest show of them all, though. During an appearance on Carlson's program last night, a discussion that was barely civil at its start spun out of control from there. There was shouting, there was crying, there was gnashing of teeth.
Why is she working in seedy strip clubs while you're on television wearing expensive suits? Why is she doing that?
Because she wants to, Tucker.
And oh, this she is wants a, to.
This is America. This is America. And guess what? If a woman wants to perform in a strip club, she does so. Even though people like you demean her.
What, demeaning
and call her?
You're the one who's profiting.
You're the one that refers to her consistently as
right.
a porn star and as to me as a creepy porn lawyer. And meanwhile, you give the president. Meanwhile, you give the president a pass had unprotected sex with the porn star with a 4-month-old son at home.
Well, you are a moralizer for a guy who does what you do.
Oh, for God's sake. Oh, those two deserve each other.
Meeting of the minds.
I think they should be they should be sentenced to a prison cell together.
The top 5 at 5. Yeah!
Makes women appear more attractive and makes a person virtually invulnerable to criticism.
Alcohol is a way of life. Alcohol is my way of life, and I aim to keep it.
Find it, buy it, make it. I don't care. Just get me some booze and fast.
I can't take this much longer. I gotta have a beer.
Fat, drunk, and stupid is no way to go through life, son.
There's some things Metallica shouldn't do, and this is one of them.
Prince. Yeah, that one didn't work.
Yeah.
Not at all.
But I like listening to that Billy Corgan. Smashing Pumpkins. He still has the same voice.
But it's so
You know
beautiful.
He's one of those singers, you know it's him immediately, right?
Right.
Two lines into it.
Yeah, that's
whether he's
true.
Singing about a rat in a cage or whatever it is.
Hide all my rain.
But I love it. I think it's cool.
Can't always understand it, but I put my own meaning to it.
That's true.
I love it. I love his.
Well, Smashing Pumpkins are back. That's an important thing, though. They, you know, first of all, these pumpkins are getting all heady, and you know, like you know, you need to smash a few pumpkins. You know,
geez.
To you know,
helps you get through the day.
Yeah, for sure.
Pumpkin patches should start that, kind of a stress reliever. Yeah. Take a pumpkin, buy a pumpkin, or smash a pumpkin.
That's true. Oh, gosh.
You know.
We've only had the Halloween stuff in the stores for about three weeks.
It's there,
already,
isn't it? So. It's everywhere.
Yeah, I know. It actually, right after the 4th of July, on the 5th of July, there was, because you can't really do anything for Labor Day, unless, you know, maybe a, I don't know, like a coal miner's hat and a pickaxe.
That's
I don't know.
True.
I don't
There's
know
not a lot of decorative things.
They haven't gotten that one.
Yeah. I don't. But
the costumes should be interesting this year. There have been a lot of, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Topical figures. Oh, another Stormy and Avenatti just walked
how
in.
Many I know. Stormies are there going to be?
And Avenatti's, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of other characters.
I'm going as Tucker Carlson. I'll tell you what. Oh, you two go as Michael Avenatti, and you go as Stormy, and I'll go as Tucker Carlson, and then we can all have a fight. That's how we're going to do
it. It'd be more interesting if Anna went as Avenatti and I went as Stormy.
Yeah,
even better. Even better. I didn't say who was who,
Tucker.
You and you.
You'd be a good Tucker with your little bow tie.
Doesn't wear a bow tie anymore. He said that was like a...
That shows how often I'm still watching.
It was like wearing a middle finger, is what he said.
Now he just yells.
Now
he just has the middle finger permanently up.
Yes, exactly. That's how that goes. So he's working for a living. All right, listen. Knorpel Wagon is out.
Here.
And that's the most important thing that I can tell you right now. We got Michael Bonner. He's the third... Or is he the fourth Michael we've had on the show today?
Fourth. He's the
fourth Michael. You're the fourth Michael. Wow. Congratulations, Michael,
great.
On that. And Blake Dressel, and she is a mixologist, thank God. Where are the drinks? I see the food has come in.
Really, Ro?
And I'm sorry. It's the food smells delicious. This is Kevin Powell's favorite restaurant in America, Serenello's, which is in Wheeling. And this is all part of the Wheeling Taste of the Town, which is coming up. We'll give you details on that.
Cool.
But, Michael, congratulations on this. It's really something.
Well, thank you. I want to first say thank you to you guys for having us. Here, we're excited,
of course,
being here at WGN Radio. It's classic. Yes, and we are participating in this year Taste of the Town Wheeling's 18th annual, so it's a big deal. It's the first time that it'll be at the Chevy Chase
Country Club.
Mm. And so it'll be the inaugural event there, but it's an 18-year event. And we're really excited to be participating.
And Wheeling has always been one of those areas in Chicago, the Chicago metropolitan area, that is like a sneak restaurant place. You know, it's always Milwaukee Avenue in Wheeling has been the, sneak isn't the right word, there's always been amazing stuff out there,
right.
And people on the North Shore go there, and people from the city go up there to go eat,
absolutely,
too. Yeah.
We're proud to actually carry that tradition at Serenello's, but you're right in what you're saying. I mean, Bob Chim has been a institution up there for years. And if you guys can recall, Chef Jean Blanchet, who put Wheeling on the map with this restaurant, La Francais, many years ago.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Right. That was one of the most important restaurants in America.
Absolutely.
It was right there in Wheeling.
It was like the go-to reference if you wanted to say, oh, what, are you going to go to La Francais? Like, you know, or like my parents for their anniversary, we're going to go all pitch in and send them to La Francais.
Yes.
And then Bob Chin's was another kind of destination. Mm. And now Serenello's with our own. You know,
so I would go through all of the... Well, let me do it very quickly. Mm-hmm. Baron Barbecue, Benihana, Bob Chin's, Buca di Beppo. I'm doing this in alphabetical order.
Yeah.
Chevy Chase Country Club, of course, is hosting this thing, and they're going to send some food out. Completely Nuts, which is my restaurant.
Yes.
Culver's.
You finally went through with it.
El Famous Burrito, Johnny's Kitchen and Tap, Liquor Barn. I like, actually, Completely Nuts and Liquor Barn should get together. That's kind of a good thing.
They belong together.
Market Square, Mexicali Mexican Grill, Mia Cantina, Morton's, Nothing Bundt Cakes.
Fantastic.
Who's writing the names of these things? You got Completely Nuts and Nothing Bundt Cakes.
That's fantastic. Clever.
And Ostaria Truly, Pita Inn, Ram, and there's R.E.M., and Salada, and of course, Serenello's.
Mm.
So there's page two. Spears, Superdog, look at that. Tuscany, Twin Peaks, and Wildfire.
Very good.
Can't go wrong.
What a selection.
I would just assume or hope that at the Chevy Chase Country Club, when you walk in, they're playing I'm All Right by Kenny Loggins, right? From Caddyshack, how did you not?
Yeah, you'd think so. I'm just thinking. Yeah. I don't think they have the same. You know, country clubs are not known for their senses of humor.
No.
All right, Chef, what'd you bring for the food?
Well, we brought some of our classics. You know, we the Cyrano's were known for our handmade pastas, and that's truly what I believe separates us from some of the other Italian restaurants that are out there. Cool. So we brought our burrata cheese ravioli, which is decadent.
Fantastic.
I was hopeful that you could chime in. Oh. So you're snagging some of it.
Oh, I've just eaten half of it. I'm sorry, guys, but it's really tasty.
It's scrumptious, but what really makes the dish is the pasta itself. And then finally, we've got our award-winning eggplant parmesan.
Oh.
About a year ago, I was on the Beat Bobby Flay show, and I challenged him with that dish. And then we've got a tuna.
How about that Bobby Flay? I'm not sure I like the Bobby Flay. I'll be honest with you.
Yeah. Why would you like Bobby Flay?
Sure, he's a great chef, but there's something about him. I just you know, these chefs, they got attitudes.
Yeah, he walks with a little bit of edge.
Yeah. Why so edgy?
He played himself on Entourage, okay? Let's put it that way. They didn't have to cast anybody.
Yeah, I think we always take the work very seriously. You see, one of those guys, I think he takes himself pretty seriously. But he's a good guy. He's shaved down some of his edges over the past years.
So okay.
I think he's a good guy.
Hey, did you kick his ass with your...
I'm going to leave it for you to see.
I'm working here, but I'll try to get to it. All right.
Yeah. But a classic dish for us, and people love it. And then finally, we've got an all-time... classic, which is tiramisu. I put a spin on it. What is my grandmother's favorite banana? It's kind of reminiscent of a banana pudding, but it has all the qualities and decadence of tiramisu. It's delicious.
I gotta tell you, the banana is the it's the sneak ingredient in things. You can make Emeril Lagasse invented this. Like, he does a banana thing that is just stacked bananas with mortar of some sort in between them. And I had it, and I'm like, ever since that, I never really loved bananas till then. I cannot wait to try this. Because you could put a banana in almost anything, and it changes texture, all of a sudden, it pops out at you, and you're like, hey, what's the banana doing in here?
Yeah, that's true. I think it has really deep taste memory, too. So for me, that's the memory that brings me way back.
Deep taste memory. Those are great words.
That's a song on the new Smashing Pumpkins.
Well, think about that for a second, because that's really it, right? You're like, sometimes you eat something, and you're just like, this is exactly what my grandmother made, and you haven't had it since you were a child.
Exactly.
And you've tried it tried the same dish a billion times in a billion different ways, and there's some one thing.
Mm-hmm. Michael's right, though, too, because it's also a soft food, so something you have... in one form or another, right?
So you're going to get on your
cereal or in a banana split or something. So
do you look for that when you're
absolutely
creating?
I was going to tell you that. That's cool. Honestly, that's what chefs do. I mean, we cook from a memory palette, and you try something, you try to replicate that. When I'm making a recipe, I go through a checklist in my head, like, okay, does it have enough salt? Does it have this and that? Those kind of things, trying to capture that flavor.
I think cinnamon would be something like that.
Yes.
In different types of things where you're going to have that sense.
Chef Michael, did you grow up in a cooking household?
I did. My mom and my grandmother were both professional cooks.
Wow.
They worked at the Peabody Hotel in Memphis, Tennessee.
Mm. Look, it doesn't get better than that.
I know.
The famous Peabody where
the ducks walk on the elevator.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. The day I told them I was...
Do they serve duck at the Peabody?
Oh, my gosh.
I can't.
If they don't, they
Ernie.
Should.
Here's Ernie. Yeah, they can't do that.
Right.
You met him an hour ago on the elevator, and now here he is on your plate.
Pate for anyone?
Yeah. What I was going to say is when I told them that I was going to cook professionally, they both cried. They didn't want me to do it. They thought that there were so many different opportunities out here. But now they're very happy.
Yeah, they should be.
And I honor them in the food, too. So
wow. Good for you.
That's really cool.
But I just cannot imagine, like three generations with you. And the cooking style, I don't want to guess your grandmother's age or your mom's age, but the cooking style in the early part of the 20th century and in the mid part of the 20th century changed, right? Because the ingredients were changing so dramatically. Mm-hmm. And then there was this, I don't know what's with these health people and their idea about the butter and the lard and and taking away from that. But there must have been some things there what was your favorite dish growing up?
Well, my favorite dish that she made me was,
is this your mother or your grandmother?
My mom,
both?
My mom. All right. Was a squash dish that, was just incredible flavors and onions and tomatoes cooked very, very, very slowly. Mm. And then at the end, you had a bit of Parmesan cheese and some basil. And then I layered
sort of a mixed vegetable.
Similar to a ratatouille. I would call it like an American style ratatouille. But it was so delicious and had such deep, deep flavor. It's kind of like caramelized vegetables. It's like, onions and squash cooked in that way.
Got to do it right, though.
It's better than bacon. It's better than bacon.
Wow.
Oh. I love that. Did you hear what he just said?
Yeah.
First of all, those are fighting words.
Mm. You can almost smell it, though, as Michael was describing it, like in the kitchen, right?
But how do you...
Dissipation.
See, for me, and I love to cook, I never get it right. I keep trying.
You don't want to burn the, you know, it's that slow cook, but I'm never able to get it low and slow enough, and then I lose patience.
Yeah, interesting enough, that's a real challenge for a lot of cooks, because we think everything is stoking hot, go fast, 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 but that one you need to really cook it slow.
How long did it take her to do that?
45 minutes, just to get the onions right. I mean, it's amazing. So you turn it down real low and just let them stew and butter and just cook. And
so they're like, it's 100 degrees in that pan or something like that, 110?
About that temperature, I'm sorry. But onions is one of those interesting vegetables because it changes, you know, the flavor profile changes, the texture changes, the more it cooks. You know, you can eat an onion raw and it's sharp and it has a very pungent taste. Mm-hmm. Slowly cook slowly like that. It's just a different, delicious
experience. I could listen to this all day long.
Me too. Keep going.
Honest to God.
Keep talking.
Like porn.
This is
It is. It's food porn.
And I'm eating.
Food porn.
It's ruling right
I'm eating
now.
This delicious homemade ravioli while he's doing it with the burrata cheese.
Oh, that ravioli is
I'm going to need Michael Avenatti to defend me and something here before it's all said.
You know who doesn't describe foods with such poetry? Bobby Flay. Say that right now.
Eat it! Well, that southern thing, too, to get the... I mean, Sarah Nellis, I know you're doing Italian, but when you use southern cooking technique in anything, I think there is... And, you know, some of these, the great chefs of this, you know, all... At some point, you see these guys who've come out of New Orleans or some of the other southern culinary cities, and you know Memphis is certainly one of them. Because it's slow as you go, right? Because of the especially the Memphis and the barbecue and all of that, and they took their time making it right. And I would imagine with Italian food, as you're doing at Serenella's, it's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah. Well, I think every dish has a soul. You know, I used to hear the term like soul food. Really, what that means is that it has this umptuous taste to it. You know what I mean? Like it really has strong character. And in pasta cooking and in Italian cooking too, there's a soul there too that we try to cook towards.
Right.
You know, it's like, you know, you think of like marinara, it's called gravy, or the meat ragouts simmered properly and not skimming the fat, those kind of things. So all those flavors roll back into the sauce. That has a very distinct taste that, you know, we try to reach when we're cooking. And that's, to me, the soul of Italian cooking. Mm. But it's the soul of a lot of food, if you will, that's umptious.
Mm. All right, well, let's start driving before we drink. So hold on one second. Let's find out what's going on the roadways with Violetta, and then we'll come back, and we're going to talk about really the more important. This is a convertible wagon, for God's sake. We got to talk about the drinks. That's the most important thing. That's why we're here. That's the reason we got here, even though we're talking about food porn right now. Violetta. All right, convertible wagon is rolling.
Yes, it is.
And we've got Serenello's, which is Kevin Powell's jam.
It's delicious.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I don't know what happened to Kevin Powell, but he's hiding under his desk now. I don't know what he did. Did he leave? I'll sue him for leaving.
Inside the kitchen. He's probably...
That's what he's doing. You're absolutely right, Chef.
You know, sometimes... Did you see that picture of the bear that got its head stuck in a water bottle? in a Kool-Aid bottle? This is kind of what Kevin's now... His head is actually stuck in a vat of marinara sauce. Or do we call it gravy? Now, we do have... Michael Bonner is the head chef at Serenello's. And Blake Dressel is with us. He is the mixologist, and he's mixing things for me that are very important to my sanity at this moment. So thank you very much. I appreciate your hard work here. Now, there's something with apple slices in it, and like the banana, I undervalue the apple, and yet this is absolutely delicious.
Those are actually pears. We're using a...
this is why I undervalue the apple.
a red pear and a French butter pear, and that is the pear of lemons. So a little play on words there, it's a cocktail with Grey Goose Le Poix, a little bit of lemon sorbetto, lemonade, fresh and fruity for the end.
What's a lemon sorbetto?
It's a lemon sorbet that Chef Michael makes in house at Serenello's.
And what is the sorbetto? What does betto mean?
Think Italian ice.
Oh, just Italian as opposed to sorbet, which is French. Mm-hmm. See, two sips into this, and all of a sudden I forget everything.
I've been enjoying it for the last segment, too.
Yes.
It's fantastic. It's crisp, clean, refreshing, has a nice flavor to it. Perfect for this kind of time of year, I think, actually, where we're still feeling summery, but...
Yes. That's why I immediately gravitated to it, because it's good. Well, it also has pieces of fruit on it, which that makes it a meal then.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. Sure, it's part of the food pyramid.
It's technically a fruit salad.
Yes, exactly.
That's right. That counts.
That's what I was thinking.
But Michelle Obama told us to eat more of these.
That's exactly
what she meant, too, when she said you need to have more of that. Although, I bet they're drinking some I'm imagining them laughing. Some are sitting outside enjoying a drink and just laughing.
Yeah.
All right. And then now we got a Moscow Mule-ish kind of thing here.
Yeah. So this one's the Milano Mule. Mm-hmm. It has a little bit of limoncello and fever tree ginger beer.
Oh, wow.
Tito's, little squeeze of lime.
Oh, that is really good.
Very nice.
I did not anticipate what was just going to happen there because I'm not a mule guy. And now all of a sudden, the limoncello is right there. It's very present. Because limoncello after dinner has been my downfall. I think that's the only. It may, in the long run, I could probably add it up and work it back to millions of dollars in damage. All right, and let us go. And now we've got something that is that's minty and spriggy and red. What is this?
Yeah, so this will be the sangria that we're serving at the event coming up. So it's a little Italian spin on a Spanish classic, and it has a Tuscan Sangiovese as the base.
Also,
brandy and some Honeycrisp apple.
More fruit,
citrus.
Tuscan Sangiovese was my lawyer for many years.
Yes, I remember. He's a good painter as well.
He was very good. Yeah. and this is, by the way, if people want to see this in action, this is really cool. At Wheeling's Taste of the Town, and it's something like 20 restaurants, right? Something like that, just about that, that are involved in this and other kinds of food emporia. And it's at Chevy Chase Country Club, which is 1000 North Milwaukee Avenue. It is Thursday the 27th, so about 2 weeks away. And it is from 5 to 8 p.m. I don't think people should miss this.
No. Great restaurants.
Really going to be something. And people should check out Serenello's because this is up on the North Shore, which has become really competitive AF, as the kids like to say, because there's just so much going on up there, right? Just east of you in Highwood, it's very competitive. And then you get to, Vernon Hills is competitive. And now Wheeling on Milwaukee Avenue, which has always been competitive, has had to, tighten up the game, right?
Yeah, totally. I mean, there's no room for error every night. You know, we engage in, culinary warfare, so
I love it. I like that attitude.
Well, it's true because you used to come downtown for the fancy dinners, but now people have that expectation in the suburbs, and you're getting it.
Mm-hmm. Totally. I mean, if you can eat good 5-10 minutes away from home, why wouldn't you want that?
Sure.
For something like this.
And carry out and stuff like that, too, especially when it gets darker out.
Totally. And we offer carry out, and we do business with Uber and Uber Eats and those types of things, too.
Oh,
so
yeah.
Have it delivered right to your home.
Yeah.
It's too easy.
So, interesting, Chef. I know that, there's television networks devoted to food. And for this has been a generational thing, right?
Absolutely.
That it all started on the Food Channel, 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But so there's always been like a television component, of late to this. But it seems now that the fruits of that have paid off. Kids who grew up, instead of watching cartoons, were watching guys like Emeril or others, Jan Kahn Cook, guys like that, like on TV doing stuff. And the chef-driven restaurants or food trucks or whatever it happens to be, the game has been upped. And do you think it's a game of training or of quality of product? What do you think is making the restaurant experience in America, but Chicago specifically, so much better than it used to be?
Well, I think there's a lot to unpack in that question. The first thing I would say is that, I like the attention that we're getting right now and the food shows are putting on us. I mean, it really, gives an eye into what we do. I think it also puts more challenges. People come in and they're like, okay, I know what frog was and you're using too much, So you have an educated customer now that we have to deal with that we didn't have to deal with before. I think that in Chicago, unlike some of the other bigger cities across the country, the rents are cheaper. So, the chefs can be a little bit more inventive, a little bit more creative because they don't have to have a full dining room for lunch or have to have a full dining room for dinner. And they can put things on that you don't necessarily need an exact formula to work. So I think Chicago's unique in that light that, we have a lot of young chefs, a lot of chefs out there that are really doing some different things. And because of that, Chicago's a very powerful restaurant city across the world now.
Oh, no question.
Compared to anywhere, right?
I
wish they had the TV shows back like in the 60s. Can you imagine,
don't
though?
You?
Yeah. This week, who's got the best stroganoff? Chicken a la King Wars.
Chef Boyardee.
Right? Dr. Thermidor, who does it best?
Oh, my God.
It's true.
Our contestants are Don Draper.
The foods, right?
Variety it wasn't there then.
Those right. actually well, might be sagas. I mean, I don't think you can get those done in like imagine? 15 minutes.
But isn't it interesting, though, too, is that but the food quality has changed. Like the delivery of the logistics of getting food. You know, people like to say farm to table, but let's just be honest. It was always coming from farm to table. Mm-hmm. How long did it get there? Where was the farm? What were they doing? What was the product that they were putting out? Were they just, you know, was it just for, what's the quality of what's going on the farms is totally different.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, it's an amazing, and they, you know, they say, well, the American farm is dead. Well, it's not.
No.
And sometimes the American farm is in the middle of a city.
No.
You know, there are parts of the South Side. There is an amazing story that doesn't get told about the city of Chicago, where you go to the grocery store or in your restaurants, you guys get the primary shot at it in terms of the greens that are being grown indoors in some cases here.
Yeah, those microgreens, they're doing them on the South Side, or, big greenhouses.
Yes, gigantic greenhouses, or sometimes on the outside, and they're amazing.
Yeah, at the prison too.
Yeah,
remember at a jail.
Who can forget?
They harvest there, and they actually sell to. To local restaurants.
I know, and it's great stuff. Yeah. It's great stuff, and it teaches people a new skill, too, that, they thought was done. It's amazing stuff.
Yeah, we're excited to be participating in that, too. Whenever we have an opportunity to use product like that, we're excited to announce that and take pride in serving it. You know, it's wonderful. I think educated, the customers are so much more educated than they were, you know, just 10 years ago.
Oh, sure, for sure. Know? Yeah, tastes have changed, and it's really an amazing thing. All right, well, Chef, thank you for being here. We really just wanted to talk to the bartender, but okay, it was nice of you to stop by.
You were awesome.
But Serinello's, you got to check out Serinello's, which is up in Wheeling, and just it is a very, 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 very special thing. And people sometimes get confused, and they think, well, Serinello's, it sounds like it's a chain. It's not.
No.
It's a standalone restaurant.
Absolutely.
In Chicago. It's part of the Lettuce brand, which is some of the best restaurants in the world now are happening here in Chicago as a result of them. But, you know, each one of these things are chef-driven and very, very, very specific. Specifically good, because the food quality, and they pound that home. And Blake has made us, he's made us painkillers, is basically what he's made here.
So good, yes, Blake.
He did his job
so
well. These are delicious.
Exactly. Congratulations to you on that. We'll be talking to Northwestern would like you to go over. They've got a surgery in about 15 minutes and they need to knock a guy out. So congratulations
about
on that.
That.
Thank you for doing that. Let us check in now. Judy Pilak has the WGN News on WGN Everywhere. Show with Anna DeVlantis on WGN Everywhere. It's the White Sox are on 7:20 a.m. We take the show to the interwebs.
And weird things happen.
Yeah. And it just gets weirder and weirder and weirder by the second when we do this. Coming up, we have got, this is a very interesting situation, because we have got a young man who is considered to be the next Chance the Rapper. Here in Chicago.
I can't wait.
So we are going to have him for Live Music Friday.
Wow.
It's going to be very interesting.
Oh, I thought Kevin was going to sing.
My big breakout performance.
Yeah, it's your breakout, all right. That's a breakout. That's what's happening. All right.
Spit some lyrics up there.
You gonna spit in the mic?
Spitting spit? Out there, yeah.
You going to do some spitting?
Yeah. All right, let's not embarrass ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Polo the Pony, the whitest rapper ever. That'd be his little symbol.
Well, White Boy Rick's already taken, so he can't actually be that.
The course is par 4, but I got a birdie.
You can hear it now.
All right, so.
Golf rap, that's what you should do.
There is not enough rap about golf. I agree with you on that.
What about golf rap? You guys might have something there.
And all the trouble that happens to you on the golf course.
It's
and
painful.
How frustrating it is.
Challenging.
I was talking to Bay about the fairway.
There you go. That's the first word.
Maybe there's enough golf rap.
All right.
All right. Richard Roper is here. We talked about the movies yesterday. Let's talk a little bit about TV, because TV is like the movies now, right?
Absolutely,
The product, this is the golden age of television, if you count not so much for the networks. Although there is some pretty good stuff on the networks, but less for the networks and certainly for the pay cable and over the top stuff like Netflix and that. I mean, it's just there are some great things that you're seeing in episodic television. You're like, how come they can't make movies like this anymore? It's turned around. You go to a movie and go, why isn't TV like this? Now it's the other way around.
Yeah, and part of it is because the studios, the big studios, spend so much money and so much time on those tentpole superhero movies that cost over $200 million to make, that there's not a lot of room for the character-driven, writer-driven dramas and comedies that we used to get. We got most of the time in the history of movies. So a lot of the writers, a lot of the showrunners, and certainly a lot of the great actors have moved to television because, and look, a lot of them love to be in the Avengers movies, but if you look at the list of Emmy nominees, you see a lot of names of people who had big movie careers or, are veterans. And this is where they find, if you're Jane Fonda and Lily Tomlin and you get a chance to do something like Grace and Frankie, there's nothing out there for them to do a movie. It'd be once a year to do some sort of like, oh, two grandmas go on a road trip and discover some pot in the glove compartment. And then, that kind of road trip movie. So that's why television, a lot of people, will make the argument that the quality is even higher than
there's so much great content. You're seeing so much money with Netflix pouring money into new original series, and they're incredible.
Would you like a stand-up special, Anna? Here you go.
Seriously, how much? Yeah, okay.
Well, are they paying anybody for those things?
They are. They are throwing money.
How are they able to afford it?
Well, because everybody subscribes to Netflix, and if they increase your subscription by $2, nobody ever says, that's it, I'm giving up my Netflix. You'll give up anything else. That's it, I'm giving up my car.
Because it's still
my car insurance is too much, or the gas is too high. I'm giving up my wife.
But no one
will give up their Netflix.
Well, it is still cheap, reasonable, compared to sort of cable television, DirecTV.
All right, so here are the 2018 Emmys, which are going to be on Sunday night. Who's hosting? What network is it on? Do we even know?
Oh, I know who's hosting. It's the Saturday Night Live, the Weekend Update guys.
Right.
Colin Jost and Michael Che.
Scarlett Johansson's boyfriend and Michael Che.
Yes.
Colin Jost from the memory. Yeah, those guys.
And
who I like.
Yeah, they're known to be very political. We'll see if they choose to do that or not.
And so that means it'll be on the NBC because it moves around between the networks because it's the Emmys. So everybody gets a shot at it, and they get to put their frontline talent to host it. And it's interesting that Saturday Night Live is what NBC has chosen to put
on. Yeah, it is interesting. And as Ro pointed out, and both of you pointed out, like, so many of these shows are either Amazon Prime or Hulu or HBO, and I don't remember which network, but there was one recently where they hosted the Emmys and they didn't win any Emmys.
Oh.
All night long on that network, they kept saying, the winner is, and this is Amazon Prime's third Emmy of the year.
ABC would be my guess.
Yeah, it was
Okay. Drama series. Best drama series is Game of Thrones. Again, name one that's actually on a network, except for one. Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, The Americans, The Crown, Handmaid's Tale, This Is Us, and Westworld.
Wow, so This Is Us is the only network one, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. Who are you predicting here?
It's not going to be This Is Us because there's a lot of crying on that show. Yeah. Everybody, and there's a lot of pauses, and then they stop, and they look at each other, and then somebody breaks out into tears. It's generally a man squirting out a man tear, gosh. And I don't get it. I don't understand it. Game of Thrones wins this going away.
See, I would disagree and say Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, yeah.
Because that has become such a darling of the media, because it's dystopian future and has so much to say about it. And it's great, good. But I would think maybe Game of Thrones, for sure, when they finally have their last season, which I believe is going to be in 2040. They're still working on it.
They're going to stretch
out. But I almost do feel like people feel like, oh, God, what happened last year? Because it's so few and far between. So, and everything here is really good. Yeah. And, the Emmy voters, they love those Brits. So don't discount The Crown.
Okay.
I like that.
All right. Comedy series, Atlanta, Barry, Blackish, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Glow, Silicon Valley, The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, and Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Now, Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, Tina Fey, who produces and writes that. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tell you that the answer to this question, even though Curb Your Enthusiasm, we don't know if this is the last season.
We never know.
It's up to him.
Great comeback season or return.
Great season.
Sure, right?
So good.
But The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel wins the Emmy. It won the Golden Globe. It will win the Emmy.
It's hard to argue with that. The only other contender, I think, would be Atlanta, because Donald Glover has become such a huge star.
You know, he looks just like that rapper.
Like Childish Gambino?
Yeah. Oh. Isn't that weird?
But I agree with you, because I think he can, you know, he's got other chances to win in writing and acting, I think.
Yes. So. I think The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, it's got a crazy great cast. Mm-hmm. It reminds you of, it's got the art direction of Mad Men. Mm-hmm. It takes you into this moment in time in the late 1950s, early 1960s in New York, mm-hmm. and they don't miss a beat of the way that thing looks, okay. and it's not only really, really comfortable to watch, mm-hmm. it challenges you too. I mean, there's some things that happen in it that are really, they're very, very, very interesting, and you're watching that. Okay. She's a breakout star from Chicago.
Actually. She is.
Yes.
Oh, how about that?
All right. Limited series. Genius. Picasso. Godless. Patrick Melrose. The Alienist. The Assassination of Gianni Versace. American Crime Story. I have no clue.
They like those American Crime Stories, right? The OJ one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
A lot of Emmys. I would be honest with you and tell you that's the only one of those I saw.
Oh, gosh.
So
that tells you something.
I'm going with Genius Picasso because it's the first one.
Yeah. And there's great actors in it and everything, but I kind of felt like, well, I walk by that Picasso every day, so I didn't have the interest in that I probably should.
All right. Lead actor in a drama, Jason Bateman for Ozark.
Love
showing Kay Brown for This Is Us. He's one of the guys who stops and just his lower lip quivers.
Okay.
He was also in that OJ thing, mm-hmm. by the way, mm-hmm. people should notice. Ed Harris for Westworld. He might get it because he's Ed Harris.
Yeah.
Matthew Reese for The Americans. Milo Ventimiglia for This Is Us. And Jeffrey Wright for Westworld. Oh, that's a tough one.
I love Jason Bateman in The Ozarks.
Oh, I do too.
What a good
so
series.
Good.
He wins it.
We can root for him. Yeah, and Westworld's, you know, great, but it got too confusing, so and people get mad at it and won't vote for it.
And there's two, and it's split in the vote.
Yeah.
All right, lead actor in a comedy, Anthony Anderson for Blackish, Ted Danson for The Good Place, Larry David for Curb, Donald Glover for Atlanta, Bill Hader for Barry, and William H. Macy for Shameless.
I don't know, Curb.
Maybe Larry gets it there. Maybe Larry David gets it there. Although it's kind of funny because he's playing Larry David.
But I'm gonna go with William H. Macy because we don't know a
classic actor.
I guess Shameless is coming back for one more season. Without
this season comes back. It's gonna come back actually for a couple more. This is Emmy Rossum's last series. It's done. So it'll start this week actually.
Lead actress in a drama, Claire Foy for The Crown. She plays the Queen, right? And this is her last season because they're making the Queen older. So they got to go. This is it. Tatiana Maslany for Orphan Black. People love that show.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Moss, Handmaid's Tale. Sandra Oh, Killing Eve. Kerry Russell, The Americans, in her last season. And Evan Rachel Wood for Westworld.
Ooh, what a field.
I will say, I would think, off the top of my head, would have said Elizabeth Moss for The Handmaid's Tale. But I'm going to say it's going to go to Evan Rachel Wood, who's not only great on the show, but also has been at the forefront of a lot of social issues and Me Too's things. And, you know, sometimes Hollywood likes to kind of clap itself and congratulate itself on the back and say, oh, you know, there, and great speech moment. So I think Evan Rachel Wood will win.
Elizabeth Moss wins then, because they just love giving it to the same people over and over.
They do that, that's for sure. That's for sure.
Yeah. Elizabeth Moss has become the Julia Louis-Dreyfus of the drama.
Times. Yeah.
Right? Julia Louis-Dreyfus won it for everything she was ever in comedy.
Yeah, that's true.
And the only reason Veep is not in this year is because she became ill, right? She had breast cancer. They stopped production for a year. They're coming back.
They started production again. Yeah, yeah.
And she is well, and it will win again.
But you're right. They're still giving it to David Hyde Pierce for playing Niles in Frasier. He still wins every year. And the winner is.
He wins a Tony just because he was in Frasier. I swear to God, that's what happened.
As the foppish brother of the other foppish brother.
Is he an EGOT yet, that guy?
No, he's not, no, because he's never going to win a Grammy, I don't think.
Oh, right, okay. Mm.
Yeah. John Legend is now.
Yeah,
he just became an EGOT.
Mm-hmm. That's Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, Tony.
Yes.
Which it sounds like an aviation term, but no, that is actually something else. All right, lead actress in a comedy, Pamela Adlon, Better Things. Rachel Brosnahan, she is the Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Mm. Allison Janney for Mom. Mm. Issa Rae, Insecure. Tracy Ellis Ross for Blackish and Lily Tomlin for Grace and Frankie. You know, the Academy voters for the Emmys are not as old as they are for the Oscars. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I would say it would be Lily Tomlin on a goodbye. Mm-hmm. But I think I kind of have a feeling Rachel Brosnahan should win it, but I think Allison Janney wins it.
Got that Oscar coming off of that.
Yeah. So I'm going to go with that.
You should have stuck with your instincts.
You think so?
Yeah.
Because Rachel Brosnahan is great.
She's going
to
win.
And, all right. So I'm going to, I'm secretly rooting for her. Lead actor in a TV movie limited series. You got this Picasso movie with Antonio Banderas. Darren Criss for Johnny Versace. Benedict Cumberbatch. Oh, he wins it just because it's Benedict
Cumberbatch.
Jeff Daniels is in The Looming Tower. John Legend, Jesus Christ Superstar Live in Concert. And Jesse Plemons for USS Callister.
Hmm. Well, John Legend, as I mentioned, has the Emmy because he and Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber won. You know, they do the early Emmys for different things. I don't know if it's for producing that special.
So he's got enough awards.
Does he win for playing Jesus? I say yes.
I say he does.
Yeah, I do too.
I'm going to go with that too. You're right. It's John Legend's here. And then the female version of that, you got Jessica Biel, Laura Dern, Michelle Dockery, Edie Falco, Regina King, and Sarah Paulson for American Horror Story Cult. She's won before for American Horror Story when she played Marcia Clark. They love Edie Falco too. They can't get enough of her at the Emmys.
It's almost amazing to see a Law and Order in there, even though it was like a true crime, you know, about the Menendez murders. But I think she gets it. I think you're right. They like that Edie Falco. She is.
All right, people following along here. All right, and just very quickly, we're going to go through supporting actors here because these actually, Nikolai Coster-Waldau for Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Isn't he the?
Which one is he?
Isn't he Jamie?
He's Jamie, with the golden arm.
Peter Dinklage. Oh, spoiler alert! Dinklage. Peter Dinklage, Joseph Fiennes for Handmaid's Tale, David Harbour for Stranger Things, Mandy Patinkin on Homeland, and Matt Smith The Crown. Mandy Patinkin gets it because Homeland's going away.
Oh, I love Mandy Patinkin in everything. But
it's the largest biography on Playbill. Whenever you see him on stage,
he does
four pages.
Like, what does he put on it?
And another Chicagoan.
I didn't know that. Homegrown.
Yep.
All right. I like him even more.
And then for actor in a comedy, Louis Anderson, Alec Baldwin, Titus Burgess, and this is a limited run, so it's Alec Baldwin for Saturday Night Live, Brian Tyree Henry, I should say, Tony Shalhoub for The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. That's a run. That is a lock.
Really?
Yeah. Mm. Take it. And Kenan Thompson for Saturday Night Live and Henry Winkler for Barry.
Mm.
Tony Shalhoub is a lock. Dude, bet the house, bet the dog, bet the whole thing.
All right.
The only thing I'll say is Henry Winkler never won for playing the Fonz, and everybody loves Henry, so do they give him a makeup Emmy?
That happens.
Not if you've seen Tony Shalhoub and The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Okay.
You're like, Tony,
Henry.
Forget Monk.
Wow.
I've never seen The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Well, I've got to watch it.
Rose's going to have a viewing
party. It's really good.
It's really good.
I'm going to get into that now.
Yes, okay.
And it's on the Amazon.
Okay.
It's witty and fast.
Yeah.
Put that on my list.
Like funny.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. All right, supporting actress in a drama, Alexis Bledel. For The Handmaid's Tale, Millie Bobby Brown for Stranger Things, Anne Dowd for The Handmaid's Tale, Lena Headey for Game of Thrones, Vanessa Kirby for The Crown, Tandy Newton for Westworld, and Yvonne Strahovski for The Handmaid's Tale. There's too many Handmaid's Tale people in here.
Yeah.
It goes down to between Millie Bobby Brown for Stranger Things and Tandy Newton for Westworld, and Tandy Newton wins at the end.
Yeah.
She's pretty fantastic.
She gets Bobby Brown. I know she's just a kid, but she can give it a rest for a while. She's always separating herself from the rest of the kids.
Yeah. I'm the real star of the show. Hello.
Okay, settle down.
And in terms of supporting actresses for comedy, it's Zazie Beetz for Atlanta, Alex Borstein for Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, Edie Bryant, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon, all for Saturday Night Live.
Mm. Oh, gee.
Laurie Metcalf and for Roseanne.
Right. I think she gets it.
You think she gets
Laurie
it
for being gets a trooper it for Roseanne, and great? For being the one who broke bad.
And she won a lot.
Breaking Bad Award goes to.
Oh, my goodness. And Megan Mullally, Will and Grace, the last two there, again, seems like a printed ballot from a long time
ago. It does, doesn't it? Boy.
Right, welcome to 2002.
What is happening?
All right. Thank you. There's
we're
going
to hold you to none of that.
Yes, exactly. We won't remember that we did this on Monday.
The world will know.
All right. You want to, Viola, why don't you tell us what's happening on the roadway? he's got the WGN news. Santa DeBlanc is right here on WGN everywhere, and that is the music from The Boy Illinois, and we'll be hearing from him live in just a minute. That's a recorded piece right there. Be hearing from him live in just a moment here, and Erin Harkey is from the city of Chicago, and she's here to give us a ticket. I'm assuming not? Okay, I'm hoping not. All right, good. The Department of Cultural Affairs special event. Actually, they explain this program that you guys did.
Well, we sort of noticed that a lot of emerging artists in Chicago were having a hard time connecting to labels around the country, so we wanted to create a bridge and to make an effort to support artists at all stages of the development. So we decided to bring the labels to them through the Chicago Made A&R editions.
So you brought these, and they used to call them the A&R guys, the record guys, record executives, to Chicago to take a look at and hear
emerging musicians.
And how did the emerging musicians get in contact with the city to do this? Did you guys go out and find them? They find you? How'd that work?
Yeah, we have an open application process, and actually an application is open right now, and it's actually just closing in a couple days on September 18th. But it's free. It's open to music, all music genres, and so artists just need to go to the City of Chicago's website for the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events, and they can apply by submitting an application and submitting a 2-minute YouTube video of their performances.
Oh, wow.
Any type of performance?
Any type of performance, all genres.
Oh.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I have a harmonica. I would like to just. I'm just learning it
we
now.
We have a golf rap by Kevin. Yes. Kevin decided earlier.
We decided we were going to do
new
rap,
genre.
Yeah, rap about golf because we've noticed that there are no. There's really no golfing rap.
Bring it on.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think so.
Fill a void market. Yeah. People have been dying for this for years. When are we finally going to get some golf rap out
of this? Yeah, sure. Right. You'd be shocked.
Country clubs across the America sure. filled with rich white guys.
The life and death messages of making a putt.
And let's talk about The Boy Illinois here, because he, first of all, he's from Haiti originally, right? We're going to talk to him in just a second when he steps in. But
it's the real deal.
But he's getting a lot of attention here. Did he emerge from this program?
Yeah,
originally?
He's sort of like, he's our one of our biggest success stories. So he was the winner of the A&R auditions. One of the perks of winning the A&R auditions is that you have a chance to perform at one of the city's festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So he performed at Taste of Chicago. He was on the sort of the local stage first off, and then he ended up opening up for George Clinton this past year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's been really great to sort of watch his rise.
That's quite a moment.
Isn't yeah.
It? I can only imagine, because George Clinton, I had a chance to meet him when he was in town this summer for that. And, I mean, he is an absolute hero of mine, because growing up in that whole, you know, the Parliament, Funkadelic, P-Funk thing was, and then to have him there, sitting there wearing, it was the strangest thing. I walked into the green room at Windy City Live, and here's a guy who's dressed basically in a blanket, and I'm looking with the crazy hair, and I'm looking at the guy, that's George Clinton,
right?
I don't get starstruck, and I was like beside myself.
No, it's hard not to get.
It is. Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy thing. All right, The Boy Illinois is here. Now let's talk about that. So, like, opening for George Clinton. Listen, first of all, how old are you?
I am 29.
29 years old.
Yes.
So when you were a kid and you were thinking about music and you were enjoying music and thinking about performing music, did you ever think you were going to be sharing a stage with him?
No, never. I listened to him by way of my parents, of course, you know, cleaning up on them Saturdays and Sundays.
Sure.
Had the old jams going, but never have what I've thought I've shared the same stage with him. And then backstage, we had an outfit moment where he was like, I like your outfit. And I was like, I like yours too, George.
Was he wearing a blanket?
It kind of was, but it was more of a sheet.
Yeah.
The sheet. And then I guess the next day was the blanket.
Yeah. I mean, he was like, he wears a thing, and it doesn't, you don't know where it begins or where it ends. And he and George Clinton is one of those guys who seems to float. He doesn't walk. You don't see him ambulate. He's got this kind of almost ethereal, like, and he is. He's front, and he's got an energy that is insanely calm. And I had the great pleasure of being at Soldier Field in 1979 when they were there, and he did this whole thing, and they brought the spaceship, and this was at the very height of Parliament and Funkadelic and that whole deal, and Bootsy Collins, and it was and to have him be still this incredibly important musical artist 40 years. I mean, he's been in the business for 50 years. 40 years on is really something.
It is.
So you've got to have that moment.
Yeah, not every 29-year-old has had a write-up in Forbes, by the way, in terms of that's got to feel so good. And they mentioned Chicago's rich history with Kanye, Common. You've got Lupe Fiasco, who you toured with, is that right?
Yeah, and we got a show coming up October 9th at the House of Blues.
Wow.
Look at that.
Yeah, this is very good. And so now, let's talk a little bit of how you got involved in the city program here. Yes. How'd you hear about it?
It was through my manager, Anthony Winfield. He had heard about it and thought I should be involved in it somehow, somewhere. You know, you look for every avenue and every opportunity you can dealing with the music industry and this industry in general. And it was a good opportunity, and we had got picked up for it. I tried out. I made it. I went through, and I became one of the people that performed at the Taste. And, you know, growing up in Chicago, you grew up going to the Taste all the time.
Right.
Like,
it was
for
a big
food
deal.
Or for a concert. So to be able to perform there, it was like a notch.
I know.
A notch.
So now there you are.
Pinch me.
I'm going to go back through this now, because now you're a kid, and you're standing there at the Taste, and you look at that stage, and you're thinking, wow, I wonder what it would be like to be up there. Then you're up there, and you're there with George Clinton.
Yeah, It's amazing too, and it was like maybe like 15,000 to 20,000 people out there, and that's the
amazing.
Most people I performed in front of ever, and it was the energy, it was something different, and especially me being my age
from here.
My age, you know, a lot of the people came out to see George,
right?
So you getting a lot of older folks,
right?
And I didn't know what the response directly was going to be, but everybody loves me, you know, once they get it. Hey, I rocks with this guy. So after the performance, I go out and I speak to people all the time, and what end up happening is they like formed a line. People formed a line to like take pictures and get autographs, and I was like, I had to stop it because the next BJ was about to perform. I'm like, I don't want this big, thing going on while he's trying to perform. So it was a great response, and it was a great crowd.
That's awesome. What a great story.
Isn't it?
All right, and now, were you born in Haiti?
No,
your parents are from Haiti, right?
My father's from Haiti. My grandparents are from Haiti.
Okay, got it.
Yeah.
All right. And where'd you grow up in Chicago?
Interesting. South Shore, 7750 South Saginaw, grandma crib.
There you go.
And Dalton, Illinois. In the south suburbs.
Dalton. Oh, yeah.
Do you speak French with the whole Haitian?
No, it's Creole, though, but I know a little bit, but I understand it better.
You can swear in it, I bet.
I bet.
I bet you can.
I mean, those are the common words used amongst the
right. You know? Everybody knows.
If you don't know how to.
Right.
You don't
you swear in every language.
You know the curse words.
Yeah.
It's the words you're not supposed to say. Derogatory statements.
Because you got to know when your parents are saying them what they're talking about.
Well, other people, my friend's parents, you'd be like, oh, you're in trouble. Okay, this is time to roll.
All right, let's take a real quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll do a couple songs. Is that right?
Cool. Yeah.
All right? Okay. So the boy, Illinois, is with us, and he is one of the kids who came out of men, actually adult, who came out of this music program in Chicago, and now is being he's in the same sentences with Lupe Fiasco because he's touring with him, right? Mm-hmm. But people are also talking about you and Chase or Chance. I'm sorry, and Chance, and there's a whole there's Chance, there's Vic Mensa, and there's
Common and Kanye come out of here too.
The boy Illinois.
Boy
indeed.
Illinois.
So we will put you to the test on the other side of this. But first, Violetta, can you tell us what's happening on the roadways? The boy Illinois is here. He's got an EP called Windy. You can get it on iTunes and Spotify and all the places where fine music is sold and stolen, the internet. And October 9th, you will be able to see him at the House of Blues with Lupe Fiasco, the boy Illinois.
Yeah. 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 Doing big things when I.
Doing big things when I.
I'ma probably need 10 cents. Meet me right over Vincent's. You ain't even gotta pretend. We can act like it's real. Baby, tell me how you feel. Cause I can never change for, I never change for. And I got the game for, and I got the game board. And I got the lane for, and I got the flamethrower. And I got some change for, trying to hit a lick. Look, I got a stain for. If they go against us, you know what to aim for. You know what I came for. Ride or die. You know what the game for. Take it with the game for. Trying to get pleasure. Well, that's what the pain for. I never change for a hundred. We gon' make it shake for. We gon' make it shake for a hundred. Now, 100. 100. We gon' make it shake for. Hey, we gon' make it shake for. Hey, hey, we gon' make it shake for a hundred. Now, 100. 100. Now I'm in the club with a hundred ones. With all my dogs like a hundred one. And I got 99 problems. Don't go ahead and beat a hundred one. I'ma need change for a hundred. Hundred, hundred, hundred. Now, now. I'm doing big things when I run it. Run it, run it, run it. Now, now. You know what I mean? Hey, a 100. Say 100. 100. I'm doing big things when I 100. 100. 100, so I may need change for 100, 100, 100, I'm doing big things when I 100, 100, I may need change for, I can never change for 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, 100, yeah, yeah, never that.
I do like Jay-Z just called, and he he's got this thing.
He's jealous.
Yes, he's got the he has this thing about the 100. Wait a second, what did he just say? What was that thing about 100?
All right, 99 plus one.
All right, and we ready for number two here, Dancing Like Diddy. Explain a little bit about. First of all, tell me what was going on there when you were writing that. What do you think?
100. It was well, usually when I write songs, I come up with a melody for the hook first, because like that's the most important part. Because yeah. It goes back to it so many times. You want people to get that in the head. So I came up with this 100, 100, 100 melody. And then the verses, just as supporting details to the main subject of the story. So with that, you just try to leave something memorable. And I broke down the 25, 25, 25, the 100 word play. And, you know, did what I had to
just
do.
Go, it just go. It develops out of that. All right. And so now, Dancing Like Diddy. Diddy, by the way, is also on the other line.
Oh, tell him I'll say what up.
I will. And he and Jay-Z will not speak to each other on the line.
So okay.
The whole thing. Going on there. I don't know what goes on. But what is what were you thinking here?
Dancing Like Diddy, I had it in a song called Ruling Class. And it's like a last line of the second verse, and I was on tour with Lupe, and my homie Billy Blue was like, and his DJ DJ, and he was like, yo, y'all should make this a you should make it turn into a song, take this whole concept and turn it into a song. And I was like, you know what, that sounds interesting, you know what I'm saying? So I took it and I was like, you know what, it worked. I found a beat for it, and we did something with Priority with it. We had it going, and that's like probably my one of my biggest songs to date.
All right, so here it is, Dancing Like Diddy.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, can you turn me up a little bit in the headphones? Look at that right here.
I got all my crystals on me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tigers out, smoky course.
Love, 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 love. I come alive in the nighttime, especially when I light line. Make sure it's lemon in my water. I'm just trying to dance with the stars. Ha, rain dance in my parka. Then I shake it up with my partners. Ha, money dance like I'm Lou and Yawoo. Taxing, we just trying to get a W-2. Take practices and flip mattresses. We just trying to get a man running to move. No passengers, but get actresses. Ha, I did it all while running with wolves. I'm still dancing like D-Lo. Hey, I tell her keep it right there. You should have seen me on Vivo. I was still grooving with my people. Hey, pin loafs in a P-code. Hey, still grooving like James Brown. On my way to the C-notes. Then I go and hit my own dance. Go crazy like C-Lo. Make a couple B's with my own hands. That's a Billy to a Billy. If you don't know, everybody call me Illy. Ha, tell my mama that I did it. Ha, ha, and they all with it. Ha, I'm running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I be dancing like Diddy. Say, running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I be dancing like Diddy. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I be dancing like Diddy. Hey, running through the city, left foot, left stomp. Right foot, left stomp. You done had what you need. Trying to give you what you want. And that's the best in line. I know that she can never testify. Paying up when that rent due. But I may let the electric slide. Stepping in the name of love. Pulling up like I need exercise. And I probably do. So I'm pulling up. And you know my groove. I'm trying to dance with you. You ask me questions, boo. I dance around that too. So yeah, yeah, yeah. I did it. Yeah. And y'all with it. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. Hey, hey. I be dancing like Diddy. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. I be dancing like Diddy. Running through the city, I be dancing like Diddy. Ha, 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 ha. I said, don't let her play a dance. Take that. I said, don't let her play a dance. Ha, ha, yeah. I said, go on, let her play a dance. Yeah, yeah. WGN. What's up, man? We live.
That is awesome.
That's so great.
Just puts a smile on your face.
It does.
It's indeed. The boy, Illinois.
Makes you want to dance.
That's the whole point of this, is it not?
Yeah. That's the whole point, man. You know, you either giving out some bad energy to put people down or keep them down or uplift them. And I'd rather make you dance and feel good about yourself.
So you haven't edited any lyrics or anything like that for us. This
you
is
know,
you.
It's so crazy. Yeah, like my last project. I had a feature. I had to edit something in that verse, but I looked back maybe like 2 or 3 months after, and I was like, "Yo, I didn't curse at all." I don't know where it's coming from. Even one of the recent songs I have coming up, about to come out, it's no profanity in them. So people wow. like my DJs be like, "Let me get one with the clean version." I'll be like, "There's no, it's the same
That's
thing."
It.
Wow.
It's the same thing. So.
Wow. I can't get through a show without swearing. So yeah. Congratulations on that. That's
Thank
really
you,
something.
But in real life, you know, it's a different story.
Yes, of course it is. Yes, in real life, I actually was arrested for it. Mm-hmm. All right,
man.
The boy, Illinois.
Oh,
you're going to be a gigantic hit.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for being in here at this moment in your career.
Great.
You can see him at the House of Blues on October 9th at Lupe Fiasco. He's got Windy is the EP that is out right now, and you get it on iTunes and Spotify and all the other places. Just look it up, The Boy, Illinois, and congratulations, man. We'll see you at the House of Blues in October.
Shout out to y'all. Shout out to Chicago Made. Everybody that helped me and talk with me and shared this process along this journey. Yeah? Yeah.
Thank you, sir. All right, we've got, we now turn it over to WGN Everywhere, regular programming already in progress.
Excellent. Awesome.